ハリーオン、サラババトゥ、サハナブナトゥ、サハビヤンハラババハイ、テジャスリナバリタマストマビデビシャバハイ、Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 61. Okay. In the next verse, Lord Rishabhdev explains when liberation takes place. When the strong knot in the heart of a person implicated in material life due to the results of past action is slackened, one turns away from his attachment to home, wife, and children. In this way, one gives up the basic principle of illusion, I and mine, and becomes liberated. Thus, one goes to the transcendental world. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. When the knot in the heart, in the mind, though bound by karmas of the jiva, becomes loosened by practice of jnana and vairagya, one becomes detached from the condition of husband and wife. Having given up the cause, the covering of ahankara, one becomes liberated and attains the supreme abode. So it's a false identity that we're husband, we're wife, we're father, we're children, we're anything, right? Because that's based on the conditioning, right? So this is separate from duties, right? Because actions are done, but if we think I'm the one that's doing them, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, then that's where the difficulty comes up. That's the ahankara, right? That I am this, I'm doing this, the results I'm getting are caused by me, they're mine. This is the false ego. So having an identity, performing action, engaging the senses, gaining results that are perceptible by the senses is not the problem. The problem is thinking that it's mine and I'm doing it, the I and mine part. Yes.
So the upadis are, I like this, I like that, or
basically the it's not even that, is more of I think it's mine,
okay,
you know,
okay.
Or I'm in control of it, you know, that's point, the I and mine part.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I, who is this I?
Yeah, that's the body.
Yeah, if it, the I is a soul, like, yeah, yeah, chanting Hare Krishna, that's not
that's
a problem.
Yeah.
So that's what we have to discern, but because in the beginning we don't, therefore, one separates oneself from the senses and sense objects. That's the point of brahmachari training.
Yes.
Is that, how do you say, by being in the same external situations, we will act in the same way due to the force of our previous karma.
Yes.
Right? Just habits are there. You separate yourself from that, then you start to see it's different, so therefore naturally you act different.
So you take it from Sambandha to Abhideya, the body? Yes.
Means you're, how you say, you're changing the Sambandha, you're changing the environment. And because of that, you'll act different. Let's just say, like at home, you do things in a standard way. You go out on vacation, you go to a new place, you'll do things differently according to what needs to be done in that place. But as soon as you go back home, you just do things however you've always done it. Right? Now, if you go to another place and you get trained in something new, so that becomes practice, that becomes habit, then when you go home, you'll do stuff.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, let's say, the kid's a slob, right? Mess, this, doesn't do anything, he's not respectful, doesn't do anything like that, and then he goes off, you know, for a few years at the army, right?
Yes.
Then when he comes home, he's very clean, does everything,
yes,
he's respectful to his mom, he does all these things. It's kind of like, is this the same guy?
Yes.
Right? So that's because it's been retrained. You understand? But if it was just for a short time, he'd come back, he'd be the same.
Yes.
You know?
Even worse.
Could be, yeah, because now you can get back to normal, right? You know? You understand? So, we're used to that it's a change in thing, but actually the focus is on what makes the kid goes off of the army. What's the change actually?
The environment.
Environment, no, but when he comes back, what has changed?
The mentality.
Yeah, the mentality, but what aspects? But qualification is there, of course.
Maturity.
Consciousness is there, but here we're getting down
mind.
To this.
Huh? The mind aspect.
The mind aspect, but I'm saying.
Mind. I am mind.
I am mind. Yes. Okay. But then it's like I am a regulated person. I am like this.
What's mine? That's mine. It's not his in the army.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, that's true.
Anymore.
That's
especially
true. Yeah. No, that's what I just thought of that. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. No, that's another aspect. Yeah, that's good. Okay, so that sense of I and mine has been defined rather than just you do it yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a new I and mine, but it, you know, still maybe whatever it is, but the point is that's changed. So that's actually a major thing. But you'll see that the sense of duty is there, while that didn't have before, sense of respect, sense of cleanliness.
Yes.
Right, that's how you see it, but the point is that the I in mind has changed. Right, because now he sees his mother's house, you know, and things like that, instead of just it's his place. You know, and mom's getting in the way.
Unless she's making pizza.
Yes.
That's pretty much it.
Okay, that's the stretching it to the limits.
Yes.
Right? Okay, so the point is one becomes detached by knowledge and jnana and vairagya, knowledge and detachment. One starts to become detached from this concept, right? So becoming detached from this doesn't mean that the duties aren't performed. Because the point is it's not a matter of doing certain duties or not doing certain duties. That's not actually the point of Krishna consciousness. The point of Krishna consciousness is actually, amazingly enough, being Krishna conscious. You know, that's also, it doesn't change the situation. So if one's a brahmachari, one becomes Krishna conscious. One becomes a grihasa, one becomes Krishna conscious. One of us, that's the point. That's what changes. Yes.
The main problem it appears to be that we not, the devotee, you know, our identity is not as strong, because we're just new devotees.
Yes.
But then our old identity is kind of fading away, so we're caught in between. So that's the most
yes,
challenging
yes,
time.
Yes. So that's why one is, you know, contemplates the philosophy. One's clear about that. Therefore, the jnana part. Mm-hmm. One has that knowledge. One knows what one's position is, even though it may not be realized. Like our previous. Yeah. Identity and behavior was, you know, generally you could say pretty well realized.
Yes.
You know, been well contemplated, well practiced, you know.
Big
yes. Yes. Yeah. The emphasis on the Maya part.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. Nishtha. Yes. You know, so then we start over again as spiritual, like we're a neophyte, right? Like, you know, before we had taste, we had attachment, like that. Very rare ecstasy, but you know, there was always, you know, you hear about it in the stories.
You heard about
but,
it, yeah.
like that.
The idea was there.
The idea, yes. And so, yes, but if one contemplates that, associates with those who are more advanced, then that will come as quickly as possible. That's why it's very dangerous to play with these aspects of these external things don't matter, because it's all about Krishna consciousness. But in saying it doesn't matter, they're very specific what secondary attributes they use. So if it doesn't matter, it's like, okay, you're in England and the next day you see you walk out in some, you know, Japanese samurai outfit, or, you know, it doesn't matter. But that doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? When they say, oh, it doesn't matter, means they will stay exactly the way they are.
It's also very specific what doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah, also what doesn't matter. Yeah, so that's the whole point. These things are dangerous because the concept of I and mind. I am a Westerner, therefore it is my food, my dress, my...
Yes.
being as against the philosophy.
Yes.
So that's why we're very careful about these things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why then there's a tradition that's set up so that it changes the environment, so at least we think of it in connection with the spiritual world. Because if devotees aren't identifying with the Vedic culture, which generally is not that popular, then what do we call, like, you know, dhotis, saris, and that? You have karmic clothes, and you have Indian clothes?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? Any other options?
Devotional
clothes? At least most of it were English speaking, they'll say devotional clothes. But technically it's just Vedic clothes.
Devotion.
But it'll be seen as devotional. That's what we're saying. It'll be seen as Vaishnav Chinna, even though technically it's not. But for us, it is.
Yes.
Because we identify with it that this is what we wear because we're devotees, not this is what we wear because we're following Varnashram. Because following Varnashram, you know, hasn't really sunk in yet.
Do we need to?
Need to have it sink in? Or
yeah,
just
I didn't get the memo.
Like beige marks? Sink in or
yeah, something like that. Yeah,
that kind of, you know. Yeah, okay. Yes.
Yes.
I was just thinking of other sink ins. USS Arizona or, you know, these others.
I don't know about USS Arizona.
I think they're all the Pearl Harbor.
Pearl Harbor,
ones.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well sunk in.
Yeah,
right. So,
Titanic.
Yeah, that was quite well sung.
Legendary.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a legendary singer. So, the whole thing is to be able to separate this, but it doesn't necessarily mean you to change the situation. In other words, if it's a recommended pious situation, why does it need to be changed? Why is it recommended? Because it's better. Pious, because it's better. Right? So if I'm using a better quality of situation and activity, why do I need to change it? Because now I become more self-realized. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the element that is here, is be able to distinguish between those two. That means there must be a sense of duty. Right? But so the two go together. Having a sense of duty and understanding what is duty and what is to be done and its advantage, those will go together. And if one doesn't have that sense of duty, then there's also what is duty is also a problem, because it's not about duty, it's what I feel like. Right? So that would be the weakness. So in that case, then if there is any little bit of detachment, then immediately then there's the idea to just stop doing the duties connected. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty. So the Vedic system is no. There's a sense of duties and performance of duties. Now, whether one's attached and that's the motivation for doing the duties, or one is dutiful, therefore one does the duties, whether one's attached or not. Right? This is then the decision. If it's because I'm driven by attachment, it's a lower level. If the attachment's there, I'll do the duty. The weakness comes is that if I become detached, I'll stop doing the duty. Right?
Yes.
So there's only need to stop doing the duty when the time to do the duty is over. Because you have time, place, and circumstance. So when those adjust, then they're adjusted.
Yes.
Does this make sense? Yes. Yes.
So now the practice of jnana and vairagya must be done at the same time.
Jnana and vairagya, yes. But they naturally come. See, now if one's following the Vedic culture, these will come by the practice of knowledge. These other things, they'll be slow.
Yes.
But they'll come. But if you're performing devotional service, they'll come more quickly.
Yes. Yes.
Like, so even if one's properly following all the duties of Varnashram or not, still they'll come. Right? Because devotional service is actually the ultimate piety, the ultimate recommended activity. Right? So then very quickly, one will gain this. And in gaining this, then one can perform the duties in a more natural, relaxed way, rather than giving up the duties. Does that make sense? So as we mentioned before, if we're performing impious, unrecommended activities, then we might find, as we become Krishna conscious and aware of them, those may be given up, just because they're not recommended. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then we switch to what's recommended. But when we're practicing what's recommended, there's no need to give that up unless the recommendation is to move to the next stage.
Yes.
Right? It means if the knowledge and detachment, let us say, has come early in Grihastha life, then there's no reason to give up the duties of Grihastha life. Because you have to use some medium to express your devotion to the Lord anyway. So Grihasthas is, you know, will work fine. But if this comes at the end of Grihastha life, then naturally one would move into Vanaprastha. Does that make sense? So that's how one sees these things. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So, yeah. So that's the whole idea, because then one becomes liberated. So liberated is not what you're doing. Liberated is the mentality in which you're doing it. In other words, if I think I and mine, you're not liberated. If we think we're not thinking according to I and mine, you're liberated. That's the simple point. We generally take it will have a particular activity. Those activities are just make it easier to be. Like if you have less stuff, less interactions, less this, it's easier to give up the I and mine.
Yes.
But at the same time, if there's a lot of I and mine, then if you fully engage it, then in devotional service, then there's more opportunity that I and mine gets purified. Does that make sense? So in other words, someone with more desire, then the Grihastha Ashram is going to give a quicker solution to getting rid of I and mine than not being. Right? But if there's not so much of this concept of I and mine, then the ashrams other than Grihastha will be better.
Yes.
Right? Because why get involved in... Why have such complex, complicated methods of service when you can work with something simpler?
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's the idea in the Vedic system. If you don't have that need, one doesn't get married.
Yes.
If one has the need, one gets married.
Yes.
Yes. Right? So the question doesn't come up about the trouble. Because whatever service you do, there's always trouble.
Yes.
Does that make sense? It's always trouble. It's just a matter of how much. Right? Does that make sense? So he gives up in this way one gives up the basic principle of illusion. It doesn't say in this way one gives up Grihastha life. That will be discussed when it comes to Vanaprastha. Because why would that be there? Because we're saying, okay, they're all equal in the way of they can all be engaged in the Lord's service, and in that way they're all effective in devotional service and pleasing the Lord. The point is how much complication is there? Does that make sense? So in other words, doing something that's recommended, you know, in a way to please the Lord, that's the basic principle. But of it, the simplicity is also there. So use the simplest method. Simple doesn't mean unsophisticated, just the most straightforward. Right? So if one's in Grihastha life, then there's so much more things to consider. It's more complicated. So one does it because that's the situation. One's engaging that in the Lord's service. But if there comes a point at where the need for that complication is not there, and there's the need to actually apply it is not there, then one will go to simpler because it's so much easier. Just like this. If you're living, if you don't have so much social needs, social family needs, which is easier, taking care of a smaller house or a bigger house? Right? You know, cooking more food or less food. Do you understand? So it's just keeping more clothes or less clothes. That's the whole point. It's just simpler. So therefore, that's why Vanaprasthas will simplify from the Grihastha position. You understand? Whatever that means, it's individual. Some person's simple will be another person's complicated. But for that individual, that's simple. Does that make sense? If you want, somebody's used to 500 saris, cutting down to 100 or 50 is simple. Right? But if someone has 100 saris, then cutting down to, you know, 25, that's simple. You understand? It just it's, so that's the whole point. Is it's about the individual. It's not about a volume. That's the difficulty with the concept of centralization and bureaucracy. Is it will try to make one shoe fit everyone, right? And we'll say it's, and we have an example of that on the social platform, in one country in the world where they took this to the to its natural development, that they had one set of clothes, one size, one color for everyone, men and women. Everyone wore the same thing. Right? And the amazing thing, what we're saying, because it sounds, you know, it's like that. We've taken it to the thing that everybody is equal. But the strange thing is this is the funny part, is that system, that social system, wasn't called democracy, wasn't called liberal. You understand? So it's thought, okay, we're going this way, you know, the centralized, but it's actually going the other way. That's the mode of ignorance. You think you're going one way and you're going backwards. You know, it's like the moonwalk. Looks cool, but you're going the other way.
That's not cool, though.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm more focused on direct devotional service.
That, yes, of course, but that's there. So that's the simpleness. But the point is it's we're trying to catch this point that it's about the engagement and why you're engaging based whether it's on attachment or detachment, and therefore what's the motive for the duty. Right, because I'm doing, let's say someone's doing performing the grihastha duties, but if they're attached to it, there is that fruitive mix. But then you get to the point where they're not attached to it. So it's simply that's the medium they're using to perform those aspects of their indirect devotional service. You understand? But as you pointed out, it is indirect rather than direct. But the point is that's not the main point. That's still the secondary aspect of looking at it. It's about the mentality of I and mine has changed. So that's why Priyavrata, of all grihasthas that we see, it comes out the best.
Yes.
Right? Means Kardama and Devahuti are presented in a very formal kind of way. Right? Like that. But you see Priyavrata and his wife, It's a whole different category. You know, just how he is, you know, the perfect henpecked husband. She's the perfect, you know, very feminine wife. Like that. You don't see that mentioned in anybody else. Because they're on the transcendental platform. So therefore it's easy. Right? Now let's say if you think you're Napoleon Bonaparte, how good a job you'll do. But if you're an actor and it's you know, you're just, you know, doing it to, you know, get down all that, you'll do better. Right? Because you're acting, so you do everything perfectly. If you think you are, then when you feel like doing something or not, you'll do it. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. Yeah?
Kapila Dev is talking about similar kind of things to...
This is always being talked about.
Yeah. So what's the difference in the angle from that?
He's looking at the analytical part of how you can analyze how you're not I and mine. And what is the difference between what you're doing, the quality of what you're working with, modes of nature and everything like this. So that will be an easier place to start from because we're used to the secondary.
So his parents have already gone through it. Here we're preaching to someone who's not going through it. Is that relevant?
No, but see, it's Devahuti's, by following that, then she comes to that platform.
Yeah.
Just like she is on that transcendental platform, but does she leave the house?
No.
No, because she takes shelter of the husband, of the son. And this is their house, so she's living there. She has her maid servants. The gardens are still there. But instead of the gardens being for family enjoyment, now they're just places she goes for meditation, thinking of the Lord, like this.
So this is more on application?
I would say is that's the analytical process that you'll use. This is simply pointing out the fine point of being able, in using that, you have to get an eye in mind.
Yes.
Rather than just, I've analyzed the 24 elements, I see the modes working and things like that. And in this way, you know, cultivating the Gyan and Vairag.
Yes.
That will do that. This is showing the eye in mind that's behind, because that's what actually does. By the Gyan and Vairag, you're getting at liberation, but it actually comes when you change eye in mind. Does that make sense? So the point is it's not that we've done third canto, we leave that. No, the technique of that is what's applied here. That's why when we go through, as we know that Priyavrata is doing all the things that is mentioned with Kardama and Devahuti. But now, what's the finer points of that? Right? Because we see is that Kardama had material desire, but he's intelligent enough to know it.
Yes.
And so he's intelligent enough to know how to engage it. And he engages it very nicely. Right? But then he comes to that transcendental platform. And then he leaves, and then he takes his stuff. But Priyavrata, where Kardama left home, the verse that he left home with, Priyavrata came into Grihastha ashram at that point. That's the difference.
Yes.
You know, so one, it was a sadhana. The other, it was it's a drama.
Yeah.
Like that. They're just playing the parts.
Yes.
You know. Yeah. So, yes. It's sort of centered around the Krishna consciousness, because both will, because the point is how will the feminine nature not be so much self-centered, right? If it's a reflection, or if it's a response. So if the woman's not going to be self-centered, what does that mean?
Man is not self-centered.
The man is not self-centered. Right? So in other words, in the Grihastha life where we're working on attachment, the man is also self-centered, because their souls, their jivas, their shakti, their energy, they're female. Right? But the way to express that self-centeredness is to focus it all on the woman. Because if the woman's happy, then they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So, for the woman to give up that being the center, that means the man has to have given up his concept. So, in other words, she gives up the I and mine concept. He has to have given up I and mine. You understand? So, the shift is from secondary aspects or indirect aspects connected to Krishna to direct aspects connected to Krishna. So, it's more obvious that Krishna is the center. If in the house it's more about hearing, chanting, cooking for Krishna, doing puja for Krishna, studying the Bhagavatam, having people over for programs to do kirtan and discuss about Krishna, even though it's in the house and all that, that's more obvious it's about Krishna. Right? Rather than all the different duties that go along with the household life, where, you know, Krishna is worked in there. You go to Mangalartik, they have their puja, and they do the things. But it's not that the same things aren't done. It's those are done and everything else. So Vyanaprastha means those everything else gets reduced, and then you're just left with the main things. And where you can, then you fill in and add more of the direct. Does that make sense? As her own, she may call. Yes, at her own risk, meaning that you go out to the forest is the way it is. It's not that the forest is going to change because she's a lady and she doesn't like it. Does that make sense? That is there, but can you just, like, let's say you're in Chicago, the wife really doesn't like Chicago, right? She's thinking of, you know, something down more southern, you know, we're not meaning, like, you know, Louisiana or something. We're talking about, you know, California or Miami or, you know, Arizona or something like that, or, you know, Austin, Texas, you know, something like that. Where do you go? If it can be worked out occupationally, this, that, you go. But if you're in the forest is the forest. It's not going to change. The mosquitoes aren't going to not bite you because, you know, like that. You know, it's not like he's going to go out there and construct this very fabulous glass dome, you know, like something out of Kew Park or something, you know, for you to live in and all that. And, you know, you let in the animals when you want to be cuddly with them and all that. When you don't, you know, shoo them out because, you know, you're having a, how you say, a bad, you know, dreadlocks day or something, you know. Does that make sense? In other words, you're in the forest, it is the forest. It doesn't mean he doesn't take care, but it means that it's not about her being a woman, it's about her being a devotee. Does that make sense? So it's just like, let's say, okay, the husband and wife are sitting there on a couch and it's, you know, they're very comfortable together and, you know, very, how you say, the conversation is very pleasant and nice and, you know, so she can be very feminine, but, you know, she's kind of feeling, you know, there's a snack she wants. Who gets it? He goes and gets it. Okay, let's say there's a bunch of, you know, girls on the couch and they're friends and that, and they are hungry. Who goes and gets it? They all go get it. That's the point. So in other words, how you would function in that environment is how you would act. You want it done, you do it. You know, what he can do, he does. But, you know, like Dhritarashtra, he's sitting there in meditation, and that he's not going to get up and get you that bucket of water. You're going to have to get it yourself. Does that make sense? And if you're sitting there in meditation, then you don't need a bucket of water, so you solve the problem. You understand? So at her own risk means it's not going to be, how you say, it's not going to be centered around the femininity of the woman. That's because grihastha life is. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. You know, that's that. So it's not a man's world, because that's the point. Vanaprastha is not a man's world, but it's not a woman's world either. Right? It's about Krishna. So then, does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas aren't technically a man's world. They're Krishna's. Grihastha life, now that's the man's world, you know, and because it's a man's world, therefore it's the woman's world. And we know when these two worlds meet, which one wins. Huh? Yes. Right. Yes.
Can we say the Varana side is the man's world and the ashram side is the woman's world?
You could, yeah. You could say, because the Varna only comes out in Grihastha. Mm-hmm. Yes, you could say that. Yeah. Is that work? Yeah. In the following four verses, Rishabhdev tells his sons how they can be freed from the false identification arising from false ego and material conditional life. Oh, my sons, you should accept a highly elevated Paramahamsa, a spiritually advanced spiritual master. In this way, you should place your faith and love in me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So, by accepting the spiritual master, then that's how the faith is put in the... in Krishna, right? Because how do we know Krishna? We don't know Krishna. We know Krishna through the devotees, right? So then for us, in this system, because here if you're just going to standard, you just find the advanced spiritual master. And there's a parampara there and everything like that. But when you're working within within the Kali Yuga, you're working within the Acharya system, like that, where there's a founder Acharya. So that person is the Paramahamsa.
Yes.
Right? Because they know perfectly what to do in this age.
Yes.
Say what people want to say, but they know what to do. Yes. Right? And knowing what to do, then everybody else follows them. That's what it meant before we came across relevant instruction. Right? Yes. Relevant instruction means the Acharya said this, so we give relevant instruction how to understand what the Acharya said.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. We don't change. Yes.
Yes.
Although Rishabhdev, he's
already acting as a spiritual master for
yes.
his sons,
yes.
still he tells them to accept the spiritual
master. It's a master, yeah. And then it'll be about their relation with him as the Supreme
yes.
Lord. Yeah. You know, it's like Krishna and Gita, he's like with Arjuna. He's the spiritual master, but he's also the goal. Like that. So, you know, some individuals you'll get like that. You know? Just like you'll say, Prabhupada's disciples, he's the spiritual master and he's the founder Acharya.
Yes.
You know? And so then for the next generation, then they have their spiritual master and Prabhupada's the founder Acharya. Just happens to go there. But it's the position of Prabhupada is as the founder. That's the he happens to also be spiritual master for his disciples.
So this is primary, this is secondary.
Yes. But the main thing is that he's founder Acharya. Otherwise, if that's not understood, one actually doesn't understand Prabhupada. It's just like, let's say, if we take Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, Nimbarka, and Vishnu Swami, if we didn't understand their position of founder Acharya, would we actually understand them? We just say they're a guru.
Yes.
Then we don't understand the point. So Prabhupada's the same. So he's the founder in our line, right? Because you have six schools of Vedanta, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's four, right? Shankar is the fifth, and Prabhupada's the sixth. You understand? So each school of Vedanta has their founder. In Kali Yuga, other ages, you don't do that. You don't need to. Right? But in Kali Yuga, then it's always run like that. It's always run as an institution. Right? Because we have such bad habits, then we need something to...
That's why we hate the institution.
Yeah, that's what we don't like, because it makes us... It impinges on my natural, you know, animalness.
Whimsically.
Yes,
Bletcher.
Yes, my. Yes.
Mark,
yes.
Which school Prabhupada be the head?
The Achintabheda Veda Tattva.
So it's not Lord Chaitanya.
No, he's God. No, see, this is the thing, is because everyone will say, no, what about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? So, you know, it's like that, but then what about Gorkha Shortisvai? What about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? What about Brahma? It's not understood, is that it's a position where one of the devotees comes, establishes the institution, so they set up the formulas that everybody can use, whether you understand them or not, they work. Right? So they come and do that. Because the point is, you can say it's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And it's not by saying someone's the founder of Acharya doesn't mean that, you know, everybody else is a schnook. You know? Like when we quote, if I get this right, when we quote about thinking of sex life and spitting, that's Yamuna Acharya. He was Ramanuja's guru. So is he just the Alwars? They're all the eternal associates of the Lord. But Ramanuja is the founder of Acharya. So the point is, would we be able to sit down in a mutt all day and chant 64 rounds? No. Prabhupada already tried that. Right? So, and let us just say, in the Gaudiya mission, then those who follow what Prabhupada did in preaching around the world are successful in doing whatever they're doing.
Yes.
No exceptions.
Yes.
But if they just follow and just do what they thought Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati yes. Thakur is doing, then there's a little temple there that no one's going to, that they're ringing bells, and, you know, they're basically getting by.
Yes.
People may object to this or not, but it doesn't matter, because people from the Gaudiya Math that are thoughtful, they say exactly this is the way it is. And I'm not talking about just a guy, I'm talking about the Acharya, the Maths. Because if you look at it, as soon as he introduced Prabhupada's disciples into these mats, then they go all over the world. When it was just the local Bengali brahmacharis, then they never got out of their village. And I'm not exaggerating here. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Well, we can say that. We've grown up with them. We've been living here since the 70s with them before any of these other groups were even there. So we've known the mats. We've watched the mats. You know? Like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. It's not that there's a difference in spiritual advances. It's take, oh no, that's the most spiritual advance. No, that's the one who's been given the mandate to create the institution that everybody can follow and therefore go back to Godhead. Right? That's what the founder Acharya does. So it doesn't make him more advanced than his guru and the previous Acharyas.
Yes.
Because that's why they said, oh, why not Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? Then we'll skip to Rupa Goswami.
Yes.
You know, what an alerted tiny. What about Brahma? It's always, you know, no, it's just, that's their duty.
Yeah.
If someone says, set up the festival and all that, does that mean he's more advanced than the temple president who told him to do it?
Probably.
Does that make sense? Yeah. That's the whole thing. Founder Acharya is still not actually understood, even though now they've made a book about it.
Yeah.
Like that.
Is it because
it's like they made a book about it when? Last year it came out? Year
two
before?
Years ago.
2 years ago. We've been mentioning it since 84 about how important it is.
You should have done a book.
We pay papers, but they get filed away, God only knows where. You know?
Is it because we look at it as a social position, Acharya?
That's how we look at everything.
Yes.
It's just like this. How you say? Being, you know, like the perfection back in the 80s was if you were a sannyasi, you were a guru, and you were a GUC. It's just, it didn't get better than that. You know? It's all looking at it as a social position. Who's got the power? Who's got the money? Who's got the influence? Rather than looking at it as, you know, the natural things, what are the duties? And because of that, it makes a problem. You know, sorry. So you could get into that. That's a whole other discussion, but that's not what we're supposed to get into here. But the point here is that elevated Paramahamsa for us, that's Prabhupada.
Yes.
We surrender to Prabhupada. Then we want to make a connection with that Paramahamsa. We follow, therefore, a guru who will make it very clear about Prabhupada's position and Prabhupada's instructions. Because you can't adjust or change or do anything with this.
Yeah.
One, it's parampara, you can't change it. But two, you can't change it because the founder, he's already worked it out. Because it was asked to Prabhupada, now that he's, you know, been through, I'm not sure what year it was, but, you know, ISKCON's gone and been established and developed. So this would have been in the 70s. Someone asked, would you have done anything different? Now, with being done here, says not one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So it's just that was what was required.
Mm-hmm.
And he always knew what to do.
Always knew what to do.
Because
he's liberated.
Yeah.
It's like this idea, oh, he's from the spiritual world. Was he, you know, this material world, you know, this is our block, you know. We're the hoodies here, you know.
That was what happened when he wanted to take ISKCON outside of the Bowery or the West Side.
Yeah, they freaked out. How can it go anywhere but here, you know? It's developing in San Francisco. That was a freak out. How is that possible? But one person from there went and just said what Prabhupada said. When Prabhupada arrived in San Francisco, you didn't have shaved up all kinds of... You had a bunch of long-haired hippies there. What were they talking about?
Krishna
is the Supreme Lord. We're not the body, we're the soul. Right? Developing love for Krishna is the ultimate goal. And we're going to do that by chanting Hare Krishna. Perfection of Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. And you could say that in a nutshell. You probably go up to devotees now and say, what's the essence of a philosophy? You know, you may not get such a clear answer. So just by the association, I think it was Mukunda, he went out there. So he went out there. And by that, when Prabhupada arrived, there were 50 devotees. Right? I don't know if there were 50 devotees in 22nd Avenue. Sorry?
Not at that time.
Yes. So I think it had to be more. Then they moved up to, I think, 56 Second Avenue, then, because they had more devotees. But the point is like that. That's the effect, because they followed the founder.
Yes.
That's the point. It works.
Yes.
Right? You know, and there, you know, even Prabhupada, you know, it's like the development and all that, but they understood the philosophy, the clarity, like that. The practices weren't so clear, because now and again, when they'd have class and not everyone was there, then Prabhupada would walk around the corner with the donut shut and then the shop, and then, okay, let's go. You know, so it's like that. I can't remember, there was something just below 56 Second Avenue. I think, I'm not sure what that was, but I think devotees used to frequent that place also. You know, some kind of eats or something. But
I think it was the Makrobiotic.
Sorry?
Some kind of restaurant, Makrobiotic.
Yeah, some kind of restaurant, yeah. They go down there and hang out. You know, to preach.
Yes.
And they probably were preaching at the same time as they didn't mind the food. Right? You know, so. You know, it's fun. So that's the thing. The founder sets it. If you follow it, it works. If that's understood, then the position of the founder, relationship with your own spiritual master, relationship with other spiritual masters, it becomes very clear, simple, easy. Then one can, God, what's the effect? One can be fixed in your faith and love in the Supreme Personality of God, because that's what one's trying to establish. Yes. Who cares if they came directly from the spiritual world? Yes. What do you call it? One has to remember these kind of tricks have been used in India since time immemorial. They may work outside of India like a charm. They work in India like a charm. But those who have been here, these are just standard tricks. Like I told you, this one guy, they were super wealthy family. I mean, like, you know, like Limburger cheese wealthy family. You know, that's stinky. Right? Then they were silk merchants. And they had, I forget at the time, like, you know, something like a crores of rupees, you know, millions in silk at a fair in New York. And the fair caught on fire and burnt down. It was some kind of a fabric fair. So all their stock was there. So now, you know, it reduces your kind of capital position. So they weren't that wealthy. And this the son in the family was interested in ISKCON. He'd pop by now and again. I'd see him in Mayapur regularly. You know, he'd come down for all the festivals and stuff. Like, they're just up the river a couple of, you know, I think 2 hours by train or something. You know, like going to Calcutta, it was from there. And they were like that for a long time. And then I think once they got established and, you know, he got the business going more and everything like that, so it was more, you know, there's more benefit to be gained. And then one day, some Indian sadhu shows up at the door. And he asks, you know, he comes, says, now you're ready. He says, now I'm ready. Yes, before you were not ready. I was not ready. He says, no, but now you're ready. You know, and so then, wow, what's this? Oh, yeah, ooh, cool. Like that. So he ended up becoming initiated by that guru. You know, just some local, you know, North Indian sadhu, right? You know, like that. They know that all the tricks. You know, Prabhupada's only given this much, and, you know, he's given the basics, we're giving the higher, you know, the Raganuga, you know, like that. It's just, everybody tries those things. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is whoever says this does not know what a founder acharya is. Not in any way, not in any shape or any form. The point is so what, they come from the spiritual world? Does that mean before Prabhupada no one came from the spiritual world? You know what I'm saying? The point is it's a position. Who does that? That's the thing. It's there. It's for the length of the mission. Prabhupada said 10,000 years. So he's the founder for 10,000 years. Everybody else comes and does it. Even in Ramanuja's line, then I think it's Vajra, no, who is it? Vadiraj, right? Vadiraj, he's seven generations? Seven generations down from Ramanuja. So after seven generations, things are, you know, devotees are a bit confused. So he comes to establish very clearly what Ramanuja said. He's from the spiritual world, but it's all about Ramanuja. That's a disciple. This, you know, well, he's there and he's from the spiritual world, so you don't need Prabhupada. These are, you know, like that. In other words, we'll leave it at that, because otherwise I can get really, really nasty about this topic. I mean, like, really nasty. Because the point is they don't understand what they're talking about. They're just playing with it like a game. Just playing with it like a game. Like Prabhupada. What happened to the sannyasis? That, you know, the four famous sannyasis or infamous sannyasis, you know, in 1980, who decided Prabhupada was God, and that's why Prabhupada had gone off to India and stuff like that. No, he just goes off to India because he's trying to start something up there. But, you know, oh no, Prabhupada doesn't like this, that. Satsrut was the only one that read the book, so he could actually argue with them. Right? But they've taken sannyasa and Prabhupada, they're behaving in their own way, creating their own philosophy. Prabhupada just said, you leave ISKCON. Did he take away sannyasa? No, that's not something you play with. Just like, let's say if the temple president really messes up and he's a grihasta, do we take away his grihasta position? He might be. Like that. You understand? We don't do those things. Prabhupada doesn't play with these things. We do those things. The point is there's an establishment, there's a culture. We don't do those things. So the founder Acharya means something, and that's just the way it is. And it doesn't matter, they've come from the spiritual world, they come out from under a rock. Prabhupada's the founder Acharya. And that's how it works in all the sampradayas. Like Vallabha's there, but it's still the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya. Isn't it? Vishnu Swami or is he in Nimbarka? Vishnu Swami. It's still the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya. Right? Let us say Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, right? Vishwanath, Baladev, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, they've all written commentaries on the Bhagavatam. But when in scholarly circles you say the commentator, who does it mean?
Sridhar.
It means Sridhar Swami. And how many thousand years ago is he? Right? It's like 2.5 or something like that. Goes back. So nothing goes. So when Balabhacharya says, I've written a better commentary then Lord Chaitanya didn't appreciate that. It's not that he's not accepted as a leading personality in the Sampradayas, but that mentality wasn't appreciated. Oh, you don't have to listen to the Acharya anymore. He goes, it's already been said. We're thinking we're coming up with something new. It's like, we have to remember, India's been at this spiritual stuff for the last 151 trillion years. So they got all the lines down. The Americans only kind of figured this out more recently. Does that make sense? Yeah, so this kind of stuff we don't brook at all.
Maharaj,
yes.
What about those who distinguish between the disciples of Prabhupada, that some of them are from the spiritual world, so they we can, but the others...
Who cares? Because it's about Prabhupada's instructions. It's not that it changes. They may be able to give more insight and more clarity and all that, but it's still going to be according to, do you relate to them and their nature? It's still going to be Swajati. They may have a wider range of Swajati, but it doesn't matter. It's still Swajati. That's not the point.
And if they have that wider range, there's no need to say stuff like that.
No, because who's saying it? Someone who's on a narrower range.
Yes, exactly. That indicates
the whole point is the neophytes, they create these difficulties like that. So the mud is, this doesn't matter. It's just like, let us say, you have a preparation you like. Let's say there's a fancier preparation, more expensive, more opulent, more rare, but you like this other one. Does it matter?
No.
Is it now you have to take this one because it's more expensive? Because the point is, as pointed out, as also these points are made in Krishna Bhajanamrita by, who's that? Somebody Chakrabarti. Narahari Chakrabarti, I think. Krishna Bhajanamrita, it's one of the, you know, Sampradaya books. So he discusses these points, that the neophyte says this. Why? Because the neophyte is about themselves. And so why is their spiritual master important? Why is he special? Because he's connected to me. I'm special. Therefore, whatever's mine is special. If that same person was a guru, had accepted a different guru as a spiritual master, they'd be saying the same thing about them.
So they study.
Huh? Yes, that's it. That's their steady. Yes, they're steady in their neophyteness. Yes, fixed. So that's the whole point. Is these things aren't. You don't hear. Do you hear Chaitanya Charitamrita talking about that?
No.
And he mentions at that time there were hundreds and hundreds of gurus, or thousands of gurus, and this thing of gurus falling down. He said hundreds were falling down. You know, and he's just, you know, like in the. I'm not sure. He's not the same time frame as Lord Chaitanya. But does anybody talk about it? Does anybody care? No. We're the one, because of Gramyakata, that we make it important.
Also because of Facebook.
It's just another medium. It's just a better medium, that's all. You know?
It gets around more.
Yeah. Prabhupada didn't want devotees using teletypes.
No, exactly. like that. It'll be used for prajalpa.
Yeah, it'll be used for prajalpa. And how difficult that is. Yeah. You know, if you've seen none of the come out of those little ticker tape like this, like that, you know, so you're reading. You know. Huh? Yeah, no pictures. You know. Yeah, so like that, it's just, that's what it would be. And it's a lot of work, and they're big machines. You seen them? They're like big. Yeah, very expensive. You only saw them in, basically what do you call it? KWEST. Radio stations and, you know, media. So, Prabhupada didn't want devotees using it because they were saying we could set up teletypes at all the temples, and that way then we could communicate without all the you know, phone bills and this and that. Says no, you just talk prajalpa. So if you can use it for preaching, great. But it's like, how many are actually successfully using it for preaching? There are devotees who are, but a lot of devotees, it's not exactly that. It's what's the latest picture that's out. You know. You know what I'm saying? So the point is the founder Acharya is the one who establishes the standards. He gives the vision. He shows how to do it. Then it's a matter of applying it. You know, it's just like, let's say one's learning cooking. Okay? Now in cooking, then there's certain techniques that are there. There aren't more techniques. You know what I'm saying? It's not that the French cook knows different techniques than the Indian cook and knows different techniques than the Chinese cook and knows different techniques than the Mexican cook. Cooking's the same thing. It's their application may come out different. So this idea is that, Prabhupada's given some stuff and that we needed more. That means you don't even understand what Prabhupada gave. You don't understand the subject matter. He's given all the points. Just like what we're saying here is, then you notice it's in third canto. It's in Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
It's always the same thing. The formulas are always the same. It's just more and more developed, more and more sophisticated. That's all. It's not a change in thing. Oh, we have to see different. It's a different time. We have to do different things than that, you know? So it's like, you know, let's say we're in Russia. Okay, it's communist rule. Do people eat, sleep, mate, and defend? Okay, let's say there's glasnost. Do they eat, sleep, mate, and defend? More eating, more sleeping, more mating. So that means the principles stay the same. So that's it. It doesn't matter. This idea that it's all about this. That's the neophyte. They think the secondary is the substance. The secondary connected to Krishna has substance, but it's not the substance. We say it becomes Krishnized. We didn't say it's Krishna. That's the point. Yes.
All right, so in terms of Sambandha and Deva and Prayojana, how can we place the Pandaracharya, the Diksha, and the Shiksha Guru?
Well, there's six. Well, you'd say. Means. How do you say? The founder shows how to approach and understand what. Sanatana Goswami is saying, what Rupa Goswami is saying, what Raghunath Das is saying. You could say, but he gives the clear picture on all of them. So he's the Sambandha on all of them. He's the Abhideya on all of them. He gives the clarity. Because otherwise, they've given the work, but how to approach that, that's there. So yeah, you could say like that. But at the same time, it's not that he's just one of the three. He is the one that Sambandha and Abhideya and Prayojana are. You're going to understand it through him. Right? So he's going to clearly represent what Rupa Sanatana and Raghunath are saying. That's going to be exact, because how can he lead if he's not following? But he's showing us exactly how we can understand what Rupa Goswami is saying. Like that. So it's not that he's just one of the three, because he is the Siksha Guru on which it's based. He does establish how the Abhideya is performed. He gives us the clarity on the goal. Like that. You know, so they're all doing that, but it's all... Does that make sense? So you could say, as you have Sanatana Goswami as the Siksha Guru. Rupa is the Siksha Guru, and you could say is then the Siksha in connection with Raghunath, you know, just that the mood and all that, that surrender and everything like that. But then Prabhupada is showing us how to approach that. Right? We can approach the previous acharyas through Prabhupada, and that's Rupa Goswami. You approach the previous acharyas through your acharya. So our acharya is Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. Right? Then there's the relevant instruction to understand what the founder has given us. And saying that someone's come from the spiritual world, so that negates Prabhupada, or you don't have to follow, that's not relevant instruction. That's what you call Shrama A that you came along. Yes. What kind of wood?
Mood.
Mood. Oh. Then we just avoid them. That's all. We don't need. It's just like we don't bother. We just stand. As long as they don't get into our face, then we don't bother. If they get up into our grill, then you know, Prabhupada says, "Kick on your face," and we're happy to do it. You know, or if we're in check, then there's defenestration. There's all kinds of nice things. So in other words, it's just not tolerated at all. In other words, they're not actually sampradaya. You know, it's the utsamayi to extreme. You understand? Yeah. So it's just the beginning of Narta. It's not even an advanced Narta. Yes.
Yeah. Is it that in Kali Yuga there is a need for founder acharyas because
you
people
have
are
to.
So lost?
Because people just don't know what to do. You're always changing. Because in the other ages, they all follow the Vedic culture.
Okay, yes.
In this age, they tend to not follow it.
Yes.
Okay. Duryodhana is not God conscious. And because of that, he's very attached. But other than his dislike of the Pandavas, yes, he does all his other Kshatriya duties and that perfectly.
Yes.
Do we see that he imprisons his father? No. But, you know, so his father says something, he doesn't like it, but he does it. But it doesn't mean he's not going to try the next day to go in there and convince him otherwise. You know what I'm saying? Because he plays on his attachment. So that's that. They follow the Vedic culture. So therefore, what you're going to do, the lifestyle, everything's going to be the same. But we're only following this lifestyle, which is Vedic, because Prabhupada said. Otherwise, it's not our preferred lifestyle. And even that, we try to avoid it because, you know, oh, it doesn't matter. We separate it from Prabhupada's instructions. So it's just, oh, it's Vedic, so we don't have to follow it. The problem is the one, did we know even the word Vedic before we met devotees?
Not me.
Right? Did we hear about, you know, all these different things that Prabhupada talks about? And no. Yeah. And so we get it from Prabhupada, and then we say, oh, it doesn't matter.
So we didn't get it.
Yeah, so we didn't get it. So we have to learn from the founder what it means by we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules. Because the point is all the rules that we don't care about, Prabhupada's already removed. So what's left is what he expects us to follow. And then we apply that on what Prabhupada gave us, where you remove all the rules Prabhupada gave us. And then what will they do? They'll replace it with their own rules. You know, just like if it doesn't matter what you wear, okay, you wear your pants and shirt, great. But why is it when someone shows up in a dhoti, that the guy who's wearing the pants and shirt, who's, oh, it doesn't matter what you wear, is criticizing? Oh, that's artificial. You know, oh, we're not from India. Oh, we're... They don't even follow their own philosophy.
Special health law.
Yeah, there is, actually. You have a philosophy and you don't follow it. There's a reaction. Even though your philosophy is bogus, you know, you'll get punished for not following your own bogus philosophy.
Extra bonus.
Huh?
Extra bonus.
Extra?
Bonus.
Extra bonus, yes. You know, you go to the standard hell, plus you go to this hell.
But
you know, so.
Oh, wait, there's more.
There's more. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Our understanding of Srila Prabhupada's standards, to what degree should be based on his books or on his examples from his life?
But his life is how he applies it.
Yes.
So it's based on the book. So you have to see what he writes in his letters, what he uses in conversations, what he does, you know, in the practical example compared to the books. The books are the basis. Right? Books are the basis. Preaching is the essence. Utility is the principle. Purity is the force. And it goes in that order. You change the order, it changes what it means.
So we should read also Prabhupada Lilamrita, his letters, to have full picture.
No, it's that you understand the books and associate with those, and if you can do that also, then that's there. The point is you have to see these other things in relationship to what the book says. So if it appears contradictory, take the book and work back to the letter or to the conversation. Don't take the conversation and leave the book.
Yes.
The books are the law books, Prabhupada said. So if you can't see where they connect, leave it. Just take what the book says. And as one gets purified and more mature by the association or hearing from others, or, then one can see how the two are not contradictory.
Now we see that there is no unity among senior devotees.
But where is this going? Is this something here about developing a relationship, or is this just it's fun to talk about these things since we've touched the topic? You understand? Because we don't want to do that. Is it relevant to this?
I just wanted to ask, do you think in this future...
No, I ask, is it relevant? I know you just wanted to ask, but is it relevant? If it's relevant, ask.
It's regarding Founder Acharya.
Okay.
I have doubts in the future there will be more clarity and more unity.
Yes, of course. Of course. Because...
There are no issues like now.
There will always be, because it's called the Yuga. You have to remember, if it goes up and it goes down, then the state that the society is in now, you know, this is 50 years in. So let's say for 10,000 years, it's 9,950 years into the movement. So it'll be at this state. But at this state, it will fall apart until after 50 years is zero. But because now we're going into it, these are just obstacles that get in the way of it developing and creating the golden age. You understand? So that's why one doesn't have to worry that it will fall apart. Lord Chaitanya won't happen. But it doesn't mean that there's not encouragement. Like we said, Vadiraj came along after seven generations. Like that. That's people following Vedic culture. We may require something a little sooner. does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to understand is that it's the first generation only that has the real problem.
Yes.
Second generation, Krishna consciousness, their culture. Whether they want to follow it or not, that's another thing, but it's their culture. Just like that, you get basically in general, it's generic. Any Gurukuli or any second generation from any country of the world, and they can all get together and have a program, and they do the same program. Prasad, kirtan, sit around and talk for jalpa, and check out each other's tattoos, you know, stuff like that, you know. It's the same, but you cannot do that with first generation.
Tattoos are different.
Huh?
Very different.
Very different tattoo. Like that. I think the second generation goes more for the, you know, like the Japanese and colored ones and all that kind of thing. Hmm? Yeah. Okay. You understand? So the thing is already there's a, whether they want to follow it or not. Prabhupada talked about the third. Right? So then. So the point is first generation is the one that has a problem of following the culture what Prabhupada gave. Second doesn't. Whether they want to be serious or not. If they want to be serious, they just do it. If they don't, then what do? You know what I'm saying? Basically, Krishna conscious, just throw in, you know, some slack in a few of the regulative principles. But otherwise, it's not like a totally different lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. So it will naturally develop. And then when you have those who you have a nice core of those who understand Prabhupada's instructions and follow it, then when first generation joins, because they'll always be first generation, then they'll have a good example to follow and it'll be very easy for them. Right? But for now, what Prabhupada talks about in his book and culture, many haven't seen. They don't even know it exists. But when people are following and doing it, then they'll have an example. Then they say, "Oh, okay." And then they'll ask about it. They'll you know, with practice, they'll get good at it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you don't have to worry about it. That was a better question than the one you were starting with. Okay. Yes? You should detest sense gratification and tolerate the duality of pleasure and pain, which are like the seasonal changes of summer and winter. Right? So detest sense gratification. That doesn't mean detest engaging the senses. It means detest engaging the senses for your own pleasure rather than engaging the senses for Krishna. Right? So therefore, then you will only engage the senses in activities that are recommended.
So that's what is meant when we say give up something. It's give it up as a goal. In a sense.
Yes, no. Give it up as a goal. I mean, sense gratification is used as a tool to serve Krishna. But if it's the goal is sense gratification, that's the problem. Yes, that's exactly it.
Like association with women. It's like...
Yeah, it's not that... It's a goal, because what is it? All the guys are all sitting around on the corner, right? And watching the girls go by, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, but what's the goal? Right? It's sense gratification. It's not, you know, they're out there because that's the place in their village and their tradition where the boys stand, where the girls are, and then you know, proper arrangements are made, then they get married, then they're very dutiful, carry out their duties and all that. And
they're just practicing whistling.
Yes, yes, that's the basic thing. Yeah. So that's the problem. It's not. It's based on sense gratification as the goal, rather than the sense of serving the Supreme Lord by practicing one's duties. So that's the sense. Yeah? Yes.
So if we establish the Prayojana and the Sambandha, then Abhideya slowly grows.
Yes, yes. That's why you see Prabhupada develop love for Krishna. How you say? Yeah, Krishna is the ultimate goal. Develop love for Krishna. We're not this body. We're the soul. We're servants of Krishna.
Yes.
You know, engage everything in Krishna's service. Yes. Then, with time, the Abhideya will develop. Yes. So we see is that, you know, in those earlier days, the application was very simple. One, they stuck to the more direct activities, but in their dealing with indirect, it wasn't very developed at all.
Yes.
And so then, all it is with maturity, you'll understand how to deal with the indirect. But taking as the solution, throw out all the direct, because that's not natural and this and that and so many other kind of things, is then trying to establish the secondary, then it'll just be a waste of time, total waste of time, because the seeing of it connected to Krishna is not actually there. You know, if you say, oh, of course, like someone was telling me about a meeting they were in, and they're going along about this, and so they're saying, so, but you know, Krishna, so therefore, we're trying to get this as the primary element. And it was kind of like, yeah, of course, like that. Now let's get down into this. Except they would acknowledge, but they couldn't work with it.
Yes.
You know, that's the only difficulty. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, the idea is that you keep that in place, and then you fill out the refinement the Prabhupada talks about.
Yes.
You know, because as we see, the brahmacharya life, sannyas life, vanaprastha life is very simple. You know, it's pretty straightforward. Grihastha life, then there's so much detail. But what we've been given here, we've been given so much to, you know, in the way of mentality and thoughts and everything, how to deal and everything.
Yes.
But is that what's being discussed?
Connection to Krishna.
Yeah, unless, you know, sometimes you get, remember, there was a fad for a while, you know, what is it, men are for Mars, women are for Venus, or something.
Yeah.
Do you hear about that anymore?
No
one talks about it. Right? But that's the whole point, it's just a fad, it comes up there. But Prabhupada's been talking about this stuff all along.
Yeah.
You know? They're trying to catch you. Okay. That'd be interesting. It keeps going around the room. Okay. Yeah, so therefore, sense gratification doesn't mean engaging the senses. That's how we take it because of the impersonalistic background. We have to remember, the main problem with the West is nirvisation shunyava. Right? We say, no, it's sense gratification, it's sinful activity, but what does Prabhupada say comes, what does the impersonalism generate? What does the voidism generate? It generates sense gratification. Because you completely stop the senses, there's nothing like that, so they just explode on the other side. Because you have attachment. Right? Then there's envy, and then there's anger. Right? That's the what Gita gives. So attachment is going to be your fruit of activities. Your envy is going to be then your desire for liberation. Right? So when fruit of activity doesn't work, or attachment doesn't work, then you become envy, then you take up, you know, when mind doesn't work, then you take up I. And when that doesn't work, then you get rid of I and mind because it's all void. There's nothing. So then you get the Buddhism. That's anger. And then how long you can be angry for before then, you know, well, that looks nice. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. The girl's upset. She's not eating. She's not talking. She's not anything. So what's the first symptom that things are going to be okay? She starts eating, right? You know, even though if you come in and mention it, then that may, you know, that's not going to be good. So when that, okay, good, it's moving. Okay, so what is it? It just goes around in a circle, right? So that's the point. So detesting sense gratification doesn't mean that the senses aren't engaged. It means that they're being engaged as a goal in your life, and rather than they are just part of the knowledge and then application. So they're involved in sambandha and avideya. So prayojana means the result of that engagement of the senses, that's for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. And tolerate the duality of pleasure and pain, because that they just come up. That's just the problem. Because sometimes it's nice, sometimes it's not nice. Right? Yes. It's just the way it goes. There's summer, then there's winter. You know, it just comes and goes. In between, you have, you know, a month here and a month there. Right?
Then there's
there's that little blip between.
And you have the mosquitoes then.
True. Yeah. True. Okay. Try to realize the miserable condition of living entities who are miserable even in the higher planetary systems. Right, because Indra's on the top, and he's always in anxiety. Someone's trying to take over, someone's trying to this, that.
Wife's messing with him.
Yeah, like that, you know. He walks in one day, and on his throne, there's a buffalo sitting there. You know, now that's going to definitely be, you know, going to affect your ego there. And not only that, this buffalo is more powerful than you. They have to bring in, you know, how you say, Kali in that to get rid of him, right? Like, you know, so he can't even do it, you know. Philosophical inquiry about the truth. Okay, these are the things to do. So, philosophical inquiry about the truth. We should inquire about that. Not that, oh, that's all theory and all that. We want to be practical. Is unless you know, have knowledge, you can't apply it with detachment. Then undergo all kinds of austerities and penances for the sake of devotional service. So then you perform your duties, and what difficulties come, like you said before, the seasonal changes, pleasure and pain that we go through. For the sake, give up the endeavor for sense enjoyment and engage in the service of the Lord. So it's not even that we detest that, we give up the endeavor. So it's not that we, because otherwise there are things you don't like to do it, but you're doing it.
Yes.
Right? So that means we may detest sense gratification, but we're engaged in it.
Yes.
So we have to give up the endeavor for sense gratification.
Yes.
Okay. Listen to discussions about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always associate with devotees, because then that will change our view, change our understanding. Chant about and glorify the Supreme Lord and look upon everyone equally on the spiritual platform. So that's on the spiritual platform. It means the secondary aspects, then they have their nature. Otherwise, if we don't understand that, that's impersonalism again.
Yes.
Yes.
It sounds like it's something very nice, but it's actually impersonal. We can't tell the difference between different people, their moods, their natures, and that, so how they're engaged. Then we don't actually understand people. We can say it's all about people, but it's not about people.
There's no connection between Sambandha, Vidaya, and Prayoga.
No.
Anything can just be.
Yeah, anything can be. You can move anything anywhere. Right? Give up enmity and subdue anger and lamentation, right? Because anger, lamentation is going to come, because lamentation will come because one doesn't, that, how you say, doesn't get what you want, right? That comes from anger, which comes from enmity, right? I want something, someone gets in the way, you get envious, that creates anger, that creates, so this I and mine then create the problem, because if one is focused on I, then you'll be frustrated in mine, and so then you'll become angry, and then you'll lament that you don't have, or you had, or you can't get, or like that. So in other words, whatever comes with your appropriate endeavor, then that's what one is satisfied with. Abandon identifying the self with the body and the home, and practice reading the revealed scriptures. Right? So that's what makes, if one studies, one becomes less restless, right? Then it's not, you don't have to take shelter of the home, right? If you're restless, you have to go out traveling or do something in the home to distract the attention. Or so if one studies, then it becomes things. So restlessness will come because of attachment.
Yes.
Marat, what
yes.
did you say? If somebody studies, they don't have to take shelter in the home?
It's like if you're taking shelter of the scriptures, then you're getting, answers, you're getting satisfaction in that there. It makes the mind more focused and peaceful. So it's not that the anxiety one has from being in the material world, you have to take shelter of the home for relieving the senses.
Oh, okay.
You get it?
I was thinking, well, I study at home, so...
Yes, no, you should go out and sit in the middle of the road, right? That, like that. So that's like, that was the point of when they were talking about doing it in the road. You need to go out and, do your sadhana in the middle of the road.
Find a good pothole.
Yeah, yes, yeah. People will drive around it anyway, so. Like that.
Yep, we are not the body.
That's why, that's why in India there's so many potholes, because actually people are supposed to be sitting in them doing their sadhana. Like that. Right? But now that people are less interested in that, then somehow now the modes of nature arranging that the roads are better. Yeah. But actually the roads were bad before because of the importance of being engaged in sadhana. Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 Live in a secluded place and practice the process by which you can completely control your life air, mind, and senses. Right? So secluded means away from the world of sense gratification. Like that. That's the point. So it doesn't mean you have to be out in the boonies somewhere. Like that. It means that wherever you are, that is your shelter, right? In Krishna consciousness. Right? And then controlling life, air, mind, and senses. That means then all one's activity, body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. Because the life, air then means that there's going to be movement, what you accept and reject. The senses, that's intelligence. Right? So the life, air here would be the body, right? The mind, and then the senses is the intelligence. Have full faith in the revealed scriptures, the Vedic literatures, and always observe celibacy, right? So full faith in revealed scriptures, that they are saying what is to be done, what is the reality. Rather than, that's there, that Bhagavatam, but the reality is this. No, that is reality. Bhagavatam, scriptures are reality. Then Vedic literatures, right? So revealed scriptures, the Vedic literatures. So basically, if you're making two different things here, it would be, what is revealed by the great personalities, what Krishna reveals, like that, then you can understand how to follow the Vedic literatures. Right? Does that make sense? So we'll follow what the Acharyas say on the revealed scriptures and on the Vedas. So that makes it very easy for us. Like that. Always observe celibacy. So it means it's the same thing as before. The senses are controlled. If we're not engaged in sense gratification, that's celibacy.
Yes.
Like that. Yeah. perform your, because all the senses, because when we talk about, we were talking about in the previous verses about sex life, so that's, it's about the engagement of all five senses. That's the point of sex life. All the five senses are engaged. So if all five senses are engaged in the Lord's service, then one's celibate.
Yes. Yes.
You understand? That's the...
Yes.
Yeah. Perform your prescribed duties and avoid unnecessary talks. Right? So what's necessary, then you discuss. What's not necessary, it's not important. Right? So performance of one's duties, and then whatever discussions necessary for that. So if you're talking about Krishna, you can talk all day.
Yes.
But we talk about Prajalpa, then less important. Always thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, acquire knowledge from the right source. So, yeah. So when it's about Krishna, then getting it from the proper sources, there's recommended sources. So we follow those recommendations. We don't get into other things. Thus practicing bhakti yoga, you will patiently and enthusiastically be elevated in knowledge and will be able to give up the false ego. So here, patiently and enthusiastically, because we think patient, there's no enthusiasm. Enthusiasm, there's no patience. But that's the point, is we're patient because we're enthusiastic about devotional service, and we're patient that it'll take however long it takes.
Yes,
that's the mode of goodness.
Yes, that's the mode of goodness. Or because it's for Krishna, then pure goodness.
Yes.
So it doesn't. It can take however long it needs to take.
Yes.
So we're not worried about that. We're just absorbed in Krishna consciousness now. So however long it takes to, for us to develop, you know, that will take whatever time it takes.
So enthusiasm without patience is passion. And,
yes.
And patience without enthusiasm is...
You have to see. It might be goodness, but it'll be that kind of goodness that it'll be the weakness of goodness, where you don't want to do anything of any that creates any difficulty. So that means even if service is there that needs to be done, you may not want to do it because of the difficulty that will be come from it. Right? Because the passion... No. You have rejected, yes, you would have passion that you're rejecting, but the point is passion, you're willing to go through the trouble because you want the results.
Yeah.
Here, I don't want the results, therefore. Passion, I want the results, but I don't want to do it because of this difficulty.
Yeah.
That would be giving up the passion. Here, it's that I don't need the results, so I don't want to go through the trouble. That's where that impersonal path comes out of. So one has to be very careful with that. Okay, 10 to 13. Okay, in his purport, his divine grace explains that in these four verses, Rishabhdev advises one to, 1, accept a bona fide spiritual master, 2, submit the questions to him and render him service, 3, reduce one's personal comforts, 4, associate with devotees who eschew demigod worship and perform devotional service only to the Supreme Lord, 5, tolerate the temporary pains and pleasures of the material body, 6, be detached from family life and practice celibacy, and 7, perform all these in a scientific way, in full consciousness. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to get to.
Yes.
Right, so very, very exact instructions.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jayanadeta
Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanatai Gaura. No, but you also have to understand what the Gaudiya initiate, that what we'd call initiation is.
Mm-hmm.
In the Gaudiya month, that's not initiation. Only second initiation is initiation in the Gaudiya month. The first one, they just call it, it's not like Nam Guru or that. They don't give any importance to it. Not that it wasn't important at the time of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura, but how they practice it. So who you get second from, that's who you, what month you're So, in their, according to their etiquette, if they give that kind of initiation, then they're not obliged to follow that particular person mat anyway. That's the way it's practiced in the Gaudiya Math.
They forcibly come to these people's husbands and put the guru's picture at the altar. And
but the point is, it's not, and who is doing this? Are they Indians or are they honkies? Yeah, so therefore they don't even know the system. Because they're thinking it's Prabhupada's system and then it's the other. So they don't have to, they're not obliged at all. And if they say they are, it's not in the Gaudiya Math. That's the thing, is they take advantage. See, they can't preach. They just come in and then try to take what we've already done. So you just have to preach back, because there's no connection. They're just a Siksha Guru that does like that. Nice. You know, they've given you some instruction. But somebody, everybody else is giving instructions also. So why not put everybody's picture on the altar? Great. You know, how about it? You know?
And the other point to mention about the patience, it's just a continuation from yesterday. So even though there are anarthas, but being patient with the sikhs and devotional service, we get rid of them eventually. Main thing is to stay in the process and follow it.
Yes, because if you're not in the process, how it work? You know, just like, let's say, you're very dirty, or a pot's very dirty, it's going to take time to scrub it. But if you stop scrubbing it, because it takes so many time, will it get any better? I take the pot, clean it halfway, this is taking too much, put it back on the counter, and then come back after an hour, it'll be clean? What about after 2 days? 2 weeks? Yeah, so you just have to keep at it. You have to keep at it. Yeah, don't let these Gaudiyas trick you.
I just wanted to...
No, it's just because, just so you know, technically, there are, not many do it, but there are some mats that will give the Gopal mantra along with this so-called Mama thing. So because there is a mantra there, then they'll consider themselves even second initiates, but they're not. They don't even consider this first. Because in Brahma Samhita, when Brahma was there, he got the Gopal mantra before, and only when he got the Kama Gayatri, then he was initiated. So how they developed the system, I have no idea, but it's the way it is. Any mat is that you could come and be associated with any mat, and if you move from one mat to the next, it doesn't matter, like that. But as soon as you get second, where you get all the Gayatri mantras and all that, then you're connected with that mat and that acharya. But before that, you're not connected with anybody. So whether you're with them, whether another one, whether ISKCON, it doesn't matter according to their rules. You know, they'll be playing on ISKCON devotees not knowing that to make it work. That's why when GBC would go to, say, one of these acharyas and say, you know, you have to stop initiating ISKCON devotees. They'll say, I'm not. And they're just thinking that they're just saying this, they're being political. But in their line, they're not. They're just, you know... It's an encouragement just to chat. You know, it's like in I don't know if they do in the Bhakti Briksha, you have the, you know, you do one round, you do four rounds, you do eight rounds. That's so that you feel you're connected with a particular mat so that you don't go outside so much. Because, let's say in Bengal, these upper Sampradaya gurus will just walk in one day to a program and like that and just say, who's interested in being initiated? Right, everybody is. And so they'll say something, now you're all initiated. And now that village will identify with that guru and won't have anything to do with ISKCON. Therefore, you go in and you get them chanting and they feel they're moving through a process. So when these guys come, I already have a guru. You understand? That's what it's for. It's not that that person is the guru, right? You understand? You know what I'm saying? You get them to chant and now are you the guru? They got your picture on the altar. So why are they keeping their picture on the altar? It's the same thing. All it is just an older form of Namhata. You have to remember Namhata goes back to Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Right? And that is just formalizing what had already been going on. Right? Because you're talking about Narottam Das Thakura, and there was some lady was his Nama Guru, but that doesn't mean she's the Diksha Guru. You understand? You know, it's like for us, the devotee that comes up and gets us to chant Hare Krishna, they're our Nama Guru. You understand? From that consideration. It's just someone who connects you and gets you chanting, that's all. You understand? So you just clearly explain that, and they have no obligation at all. If that was understood before, then so many devotees who have gone with the Gaudiya Mat wouldn't have, because they thought they were connected with the Gaudiya Mat when actually they weren't. You know, it's just like the Muslims sprinkle water on the Hindus, and then are they now Muslims? No, they just go take a bath with your clothes on, and everything's fine. Because Hindus, oh yes, now you're a Muslim, then that's why there's Muslims. Otherwise, if everybody had just taken a bath, there would be a handful of Muslims there. Right? Just the moguls that came in on their horses, then they would have been the only ones. And, you know, a few here and there, a couple of pockets. You know, just like the Parsis. How many Parsis are there? They're part of the scene, but they're just a few people. Right? You know, it's just they do their thing and they're part of the scene. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they would have been the moguls, they would have been part of the scene. But they wouldn't have been, but because of not understanding, that's how it goes. Mm-hmm. So understanding what you're dealing with. Because in other words, you know, if they want to play, they want to do these things, follow on their rules. Don't then play their thing and then we follow it by our rules. Mm-hmm. Like that. So there's no obligation at all.
Most of the time they spend just criticizing his mom rather than actually preaching.
Yeah, no, because that's all it means. It's just like politicians. Do they have anything to say? No, they just criticize the other person. So I'm less bad than he is, so therefore vote for me. You know, that's all. So it's not a bona fide system. You know. Kutinati is not a spiritual platform. Yes.
Honestly, what does it mean to give up endeavor for sense gratification?
That you're trying to get enjoyment out of a particular activity for yourself. You're doing that activity for Krishna. So the senses are engaged, or maybe there may be nice for the senses, but you're not doing it for that purpose.
Mm.
You're doing it to please Krishna.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I also wanted to ask, what is the importance of yajna in initiation? Some devotees say that you can simply get this and not necessary to go for yajna itself.
But, okay, but do they have the yajna? They say it's not necessary, but do they have the yajna? Why not?
What do you mean, do they have the yajna?
It's one thing is you're having the yajna, but saying that it's not necessary, but they're doing the yajna.
And they don't.
They don't have.
For example, sometimes spiritual master, he simply gives the beats, and the yajna can be afterwards.
But there is a yajna.
And they say, no, I don't need a yajna neither now nor afterwards at all. No need for yajna.
Okay, but what does the yajna do? It's just like this. Okay. Does, let us say, you know, we're having a marriage. Okay? Do we need, I mean, technically for the couple to get married, there's certain mantras and certain rituals that are done. Right? Okay. Do we need, to do those rituals, do we need a fancy sari? To chant the mantras, does the priest need the girl to be wearing a fancy sari? Does she need to be decorated nicely? Does the place have to be decorated nicely? Do we have to have a million guests? Do we have to have fancy prasad?
Well, technically not.
That's your answer.
But
But
but it is necessary.
That's the point. So the yajnas, technically not necessary, it's the connection with the guru that you're committing yourself to follow their instructions and chant. That's the essential point.
Yes.
But as far as the secondary, then there's a yajna. Mm-hmm. Just like in the marriage, it's just that the boy and girl has been consecrated that they can be together. That's the primary. But the secondary is you make a nice show of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the yajna is the show part. That's the part that people like. They get inspired. It makes for the social environment. Everyone comes together. There's kirtan, there's prasad, there's discussions about the philosophy. You understand? Mm-hmm. But if you're in a situation where you can't do that, then yes, just sitting with the guru and all that. But if there is, there's going to be a big initiation and all that, and why the disciples shouldn't sit in on it.
Well, I mean, there are often situations when a guru simply gives the bits to a disciple, and he can go through yagya later, maybe in half a year or in a year, with some other disciples or some other guru, even just to.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That if there's no opportunity, then they just do that. But it's not that the yagya itself is not something to be done. Because we have to remember, Prabhupada established like that, so we do.
Yes, yes. That's my point also.
Like that. You understand?
Yes. So actually, the main reason why we do it is because Prabhupada established it.
It's part of the purificatory process. By sitting on the yagya, you get purified. It's not that the yagya does nothing.
Oh, yes.
Because the point is, you're going to be chanting your 16 rounds and going to a yagya. You're not going to a yagya and not chanting 16 rounds.
Yes, yes.
Like that. So it adds to the purification. You're taking prasad, that purifies. There's kirtan, that purifies.
Yes.
Right? Because otherwise, why would you have extra kirtan? Why would there be fasting? Why would be? So you're doing extra service by having that yagya.
Yes.
So it's all beneficial.
Yes.
So if there's a situation where they can't do, you know, guru's traveling, there's no place, they're in a hotel and room, and that's all they can do, then that's what you do. You understand? But the point is to affect that understanding and the consciousness that something's happened. You know, if the guru's just packing his bag, yeah, there's some beads over there, you can pick them up, just, you know, like that, you know, and then walks out the door, then, you know, what's the point?
Yeah.
Beads are in the microwave, you know.
And I want to ask about this point that you said that if there is contradiction between books and, for example, letters, then you should go back to the books. Yes,
you take the books, and then from there you work back how is the letter included in what the book says. Because
yes,
there'll never be a contradiction.
Yes.
See, in the Vedic literatures, amongst the literatures, amongst the acharyas, there's never any, you know, amongst what acharya does, there's never any contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. We may perceive them that way because we don't understand, but there never is that way.
Mm-hmm. Just such a devotee, for example, a devotee gives an example that Prabhupada, somewhere in the train, there was some rice cooked by non-devotees, and they couldn't offer it, and he told, just mix it with prasadam, and thus you can take it, we can eat it. And based on that, which was made in conditions not suitable for proper offering, yes,
right,
you know, to say that now we can mix anything with prasadam, it will be prasadam. So
yeah,
I'm confused about
it. It's just like that, you know, it's like you cook the pizza and all that, and then afterwards you mix the anchovies, you know, yeah, it feels like that, yeah.
Anchovies.
You don't want to know.
Okay. So
It's like this, is that we're always looking for an excuse and a weakness. The point is there anything else available? Are they on a train? Can you cook on a train? Can you make other arrangements? So they have some prasad, and that rice there, they're not offering, so therefore, then they're taking prasad. But they need some volume, so therefore, then the karmic grains are there.
Yes.
Because you have, you know, the body needs a certain amount of you know, nourishment to function.
Yes.
But the point is to be purified because you're taking prasad. Not that it's by Krishna's grace you're having it, but it's not an excuse. It's not a trick. See, we look at these little tricks. I think there's another word for it, is hacks. You understand? You have a hack. It's a trick on how to do something better.
Oh, yes.
You know, how to open the can, how to do this, that.
Knack.
Knack.
I think that's what it's called.
Knack with an N?
No, a hack.
It's a hack. I've never heard of it before.
Like you have a code for hacking into it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. How to get at something. It seems to be a newer term.
Yes.
You understand? Like that. Russians are really good at hacks.
Excellent.
Yes. So that's the whole thing. So they're looking at this as just another hack. But it's not. There's a principle, is that we always take prasad. So it's not about, okay, what to do with, you know, the old thing, or we can just mix anything in there.
Every time.
Yeah, every time. It's that, you know, if you're on a train, then yes, these things happen. But if you're in the temple where you can cook, why you would bother? Right? We can cook, why would we go out and buy karmi stuff and then mix it in?
You know, so. Or we simply forgot to offer something and now we simply mix it because we simply forgot to offer it.
Yeah, but why did we forget? So why not offer it? You forgot, but now offer it.
Yes, that's the point.
Is it bona fide to pray to Srila Prabhupada, to Guru Maharaj?
To pray to Srila Prabhupada?
Yes.
To pray to Guru Maharaj?
Yes.
What does that mean?
I mean,
it means pray to both?
Yes, to pray to one of them or to another. Like.
Is it bona fide to pray
yes,
to Prabhupada?
Yes.
Why would it not be bona fide?
I just wonder, maybe we should better pray to Krishna. Just be clear.
But how do you get to Krishna? What's your relationship with Krishna?
As a servant
of
spiritual master.
Then? Not that you don't pray to Krishna, but it's not that you, you know, don't pray to Guru because you're praying to Krishna. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to do both.
Okay.
Who has faith in Guru and in Krishna, they're the ones who are successful.
And on whom should we be more focused, on Srila Prabhupada or Diksha Guru or Siksha Guru? I mean,
the point is what is the Diksha and Siksha Guru explaining?
Srila Prabhupada's teaching.
Yes, so then you see it connected. And mm-hmm. then what Prabhupada's teaching is what will get you to Krishna. They're all non-different, but different.
Mm-hmm. So regarding on our mood, we can pray to both.
Yeah, it goes according to the situation. You're standing in front of the deities, you pray to Krishna. You're standing in front of the Vyasa-san, you pray to Prabhupada. Mm. You're there with the spirit, and you pray there. You know, it's just... Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another
it's not complicated, it's simple.
Mm-hmm. And what does it mean in our personal life that we should properly understand Srila Prabhupada's position? Because some devotees, they are focused on their spiritual master, but they don't read Prabhupada's book, don't listen to his lectures, only listen to spiritual master.
Point is, but do they understand the connection to Prabhupada's instructions?
To some degree, but they basically don't read books.
Yeah, so then the thing is they should understand how that connects properly with Prabhupada. Because the instructions that are being given are Prabhupada's. Otherwise, mm-hmm. where are they coming from? And Prabhupada's giving us what comes from the previous acharyas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You understand? Siksha doesn't have time and space.
Mm-hmm.
Diksha does.
Mm-hmm.
So the connection to a spiritual master who's living and while they're living accepts you as a disciple. That's necessary in the Pancharatrik system.
Mm-hmm.
But Siksha, then you're hearing it from anywhere in the line.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When we're reading what Prabhupada says, here, now we have Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur provides, we're hearing from him.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Prabhupada, the others said like that. You know, then the when we were reading Rishabdev, we were hearing from Rishabdev.
Mm-hmm.
Because Siksha doesn't have any time and space.
Mm-hmm.
But because we identify with time and space, therefore Diksha has that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So siksha wise there's no problem. But on diksha, that means somebody present, living, and
mm-hmm.
who has accepted.
Mm-hmm.
This idea to reverse these things or like that, that's not appropriate.
Mm-hmm. So if devotee is satisfied hearing his siksha guru or diksha guru and has no inclination to read Srila Prabhupada's books, it might be okay for him.
Not necessarily so okay, because why aren't they inclined to read Prabhupada's books? And why isn't somebody telling them to read Prabhupada's books?
Because they're not inclined to read any books.
Okay, they're not inclined to read any books means it's a very neophyte position. So, okay, they're connected, they're hearing from the spiritual master, they're inspired, they want to do that, great, that's a good start. But to say that that's the standard, you don't have to read the books, that's nothing like the thing with the yajna. To say, oh, we don't need the yajna and this and that. Well, we don't need anything. We don't need the yajna, we don't actually need to do anything fancy for anybody. You know what I'm saying? So as long as when the spiritual master comes that there's some food there and some place to sleep, then but it doesn't require anything more than that, because that's all just extra. So no, but it's service. The other thing's not service? Mm-hmm. When you make the fire, who's the fire? What are the mantras? Who are they about? The acharyas and Krishna? You know, what's there? The association of Vaishnavas, it's going to be kirtan. So if that's not important, then none of this other stuff's important also. Mm. You know, so therefore, yes, we could cut down on everything. So when the spiritual master comes, it's just, you know, it's known that's his room and his stuff's already in the room and, you know, there's some food there and at some point someone will come and take away the dishes and, you know, leave the clothes outside the door and hari bowl, you know, we're done. Are they going to buy that? Are they going to buy that? No. You understand?
Yes.
So therefore, that's why there's a that's why there's culture.
Another question: is it okay to eat after your child or what your wife ate?
For her their family, yes, but if they're unknown people, don't do that.
So for family, it's okay.
It's basically like this: who else is going to eat it?
Not the dog.
Some ants. Otherwise, throw it.
You can if you've got that much stuff and like that, then you can. But what's the problem?
So it doesn't pollute consciousness. Some devotees say it's horrible to eat after your child. Not horrible, but not
so then like this. So it's only horrible one way. What about the horribleness of the child? So why would it be horrible?
Because. He is in ignorance.
And where did he get that ignorance from? Right? According to the rule of Garbhadhan, he got that ignorance from his parents. So all you're doing is getting back your own karma. So that's the problem. And the wife's the other half of your body. So then, you know, so then what's the problem? Now your mother-in-law, that you might avoid. But maybe that is not a problem.
I heard it many times.
And would the possibility that where you've heard that is in an area between the Arctic Circle, the Volga River, Belarus and Vladivostok. It kind of falls in between that area. Yeah, yeah, you're always going to get those things. Anything to do with mystical and this and that, and that's it's you know. In other words, you have the Asian kind of scene, Middle East, Asian, or the, you know, Africa like that. You have the first world like that is these two completely different things, and then you have Russia, which is neither. You have the emotional kind of needs and interaction of the Asians, but the, how you say, the materialistic, you know, technical drive of the Europeans. So they're in their own category that basically other than themselves, no one can relate to. You understand? Because the Europeans are totally in the technical, but they're not so personal. The other ones are not so much in the technical, they're very personal. Here they're totally personal, but totally technical. How do you deal with that? Right?
Yeah.
So that's why, you see, when it comes to questions, I do separate out Russian questions from all other questions. Because they're in there. And it's a matter of, wow, that's interesting. I like that. And, well, he said this, and, you know, but you're saying this. And then step back and watch the fun. Right? You know, like a chicken fight or something. You know, like that. Like that. So these are just Russian pastimes. Therefore, you'll find me always goofing on these things. Like in the class, if it's a Russian class, I will answer questions until they turn into Russian questions, which generally is about 20 minutes to half an hour, like that. And once it turns to Russian questions, that's when we stop. Yeah. You know, unless it's just Russian question day, then it's just fun. If it's just question and answers, then it's fun because it doesn't matter. But if you're on a particular topic, then it gets weird.
So this idea, they say that everybody should eat after husband, wife, children, but husband shouldn't eat after anybody. This is
means after means from their plate.
Yes, from wife and children.
This is just the in other words, it's just more less rajasic and tamasic forms of men sitting around at the pub and talking about how great they are and how much trouble the wife and kids are. Mm-hmm. So since they can't sit around the pub and drink beer, then they make up these kind of things so that they feel good. So, you know, because you're the man. Yeah. Does that make sense? Because you have to remember, the wife is the other half of the body. Mm-hmm. Right? And the child's made of body of those two, mm-hmm. So what's the big problem? Mm-hmm. So all it is that learn how to serve prasad so you don't give more. Mm-hmm. You know, and then, having given an appropriate amount, then if they don't eat, then you may end up eating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just par for the course. You're going to. Mm-hmm. That's part of the henpeckedness. Mm-hmm. Right? Because otherwise, how important, how close are you if you can't eat off their plate? Like, mm-hmm. Let's say you have a real good. Now, like this. Could you have. Okay, now, according to the Russian Padati, if you have two men and they're really good friends, you know, growing up together and everything, and they're out somewhere and that, and they have, you know, one plate of something. Mm-hmm. Can they both eat off of that plate together? You know, let's say it's a plate of chips. Can they both eat from the same plate? Or they have a bag of chips. Could they both eat out of that bag? Or they have to, like, go, okay, this is my half, this is your half, you know, separate, mm-hmm. rip the bag in half and do the whole thing. Can they eat off the same?
Yes, yes.
So why is it they can do? Because, and why? Because of their closeness. Mm-hmm. So why can't husband and wife or parent and child?
Because wife is lower than the husband.
Lower meaning kind of like on the bottom of the shoes, kind of lower. Ooh, I got some wipe on the bottom of my shoe. You know, that, yeah, you know, when you go into someone else's house and they go, what's that smell? Like that. You know, check your shoes. Oh, no, there's wife on the bottom of my shoe. That's like you touch the, you know, a Daewoo or something. You know, the car. You know. Ooh, I got Daewoo on my hands. You know, like that kind of thing. Yeah. It's just the, how you say, desperate need to feel superior.
Correct.
Like that. Mm-hmm. In other words, just act as a man, then you're automatically superior.
Mm-hmm.
You're respected because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. But if it's just you just say I'm superior, then who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Women are smart, then having a bozo is better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Bengali mm-hmm. saying, blind uncle is better than no uncle at all. Mm-hmm. Okay, so therefore, in a society of bozos, then you look around and whichever is the least bozo or the one, the bozo,
bozo,
you can, bozo is, means a clown. Bozo is famous. You know, at the circus, the guy with the red nose and the, you know, the big feet and like that, that clown.
The one everyone laughs at.
Yeah, the one everyone laughs at, like that. So in America, then the famous one is Bozo the clown, right? Mm. So bozo just means, yeah, like that, okay? So they look around at whatever's there and whatever's the least going to be the least. It's like voting for politicians. Whichever one's the least bad, that's the one you vote for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that everybody's really into the politics and ride there and go out there and make their vote because they're into it. It's just that it's better than, you know, like that. So therefore, this guy, I think I could tolerate the rest of my life. At least let's give a shot, you know. And so that's why then you marry that guy. Not that this guy is, you know, the dream guy. You understand? So, if he behaves properly, then that's what people are looking for. That's a man. A man is the one who, he can do these things. He doesn't have to, but he does. Women and children are those who have to do that. Women have to act as women. Right? So men could independently function or function with them. That's a man. So the man that can function independently is functioning with them in a seemingly dependent fashion. The guy could wash his own clothes. He could clean his own house. He can cook his own food. He could happily sit there and do his own stuff. But he interacts with the family because that's what works. That's a man. The guy that he can't cook, he can't clean because his mom's done it his whole life and he'd starve to death like that. then he has the woman, and now he's the big man, and she's the inferior, and she's got to wash her clothes and all that, because that's not a man. That's just a woman that somehow or another, the woman who is a woman is able to tolerate. And when she can't tolerate anymore, then she turfs them out. That makes sense. But it works out. Because she's got the kid and he wanted to have sex, so it works out. Kardama is a man. When he sees the wife does have the right attitude, then only they have a kid. So he's sense control. That makes sense. Yeah. So that's the difference between what Prabhupada's offering us and the reality of much of the world. You know, so depending on the place, there's more or less, you know, some area, one culture will be stronger in one aspect, the men will have certain qualities, and then other ways like that. It's not that there's no manly qualities, it's just that it's not complete, it's not consistent. You know? So, you know, the Russian men will have certain qualities, but be weak in another's, you know, and then another country will have, it'll be different again. But the Vedic is, what are all the men's masculine qualities they have? What are all the ones to avoid? Then they don't. They give those up.
I was just curious. Sometimes different situations, you know, I've kind of experimented with different ways of preaching or different ways of trying to relate to people. And, in some situations, I feel like, you know, sometimes using dhoti and kurta, using, you know, Vedic dress, sometimes using Western dress, you get some different effects. You know, wearing Vedic dress, sometimes I'll go visit, you know, maybe visiting home or something like that, or you know, preaching with old friends or old connections. And
it also works in yoga studio.
Yeah. You know, so I, you know, sometimes I would try to like that, but I feel like sometimes it creates like a Muslim. It's not that I'm being judged, I guess, by the way I look. It's not that people
they're going to judge you anyway. Even if you don't wear, if you wear karma clothes, they're judging you. But you're harmless enough, so therefore.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's not so much that I feel like people think it looks bad, or that, you know, that they're condescending towards the way it looks. But sometimes I feel like it creates kind of like a barrier.
Why would it create a barrier?
It creates a
barrier that they have the barrier anyway. You know what I'm saying? You're noticing it there, but if you walked up to the same person in karmic clothes, it's not necessarily that they wouldn't be judging you.
Yeah.
Because you're not checking the same people in two things. You're checking different groups. You understand?
Well, it creates like a different, almost like a different mood, like in the sense.
It does, but the point is I find it's the opposite. If I wear a dhoti and walk down the street, then people, they'll look, they'll stay out of the way, they'll be this and that. But you're from a different realm. They don't know what you are. If I walk down the street in karmic clothes, everyone gives you that, what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, the sensuous gaze of inspection. They check you out and see where you fit into the social thing, whether they want to deal, whether they don't. They judge you more in karmic clothes. We're just used to it. Because you're probably more used to wearing karmic clothes than you sometimes were there. We've been here in India, so the last 4 years, this is all we wear.
Yeah.
So we go to the West, and occasionally, every so many years, we put on karmic clothes. And so we see how they deal. And you're in the karmic world when you wear karmic clothes. And they judge you accordingly. Well, if you dress as a devotee, you're in a different world. So it's just a matter of which world you want to come from.
I guess kind of what I was getting at is if I was, for instance, you know, dealing with like...
No, what's the point? I'm giving you an example. Where are you from?
I'm based in a temple in L.A., but I'm from the East Coast in California, USA.
No, but East Coast means? Mm-hmm.
Connecticut, South Carolina. I kind of moved around a lot out there.
But where did you grow up?
Grew up in Connecticut, but my family lives in South Carolina now, so I visit them.
Okay, but you're now on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm based up
in LA. Go ahead. You know what I'm saying? What's the essential point you want to get at?
Yeah. So I guess, if I'm speaking with people that I don't know, like a classroom or something, then I feel like wearing the Vedic attire kind of gives you it's like a formal, like you're taking a position of like instruction or something, or you're representing.
But it's how you deal. That may be how they open with, but it's how you deal. It's just like, let us say, Okay. Being in America, you went to 12 years of going to the government schools, right? Unless you went to a private school.
Well, high school, yeah.
In high school, you went to a private school. But before that, you went to government. Now, or even if, now, of all the teachers, so that's 12 years of classes, so that means the first 6 years would have been one teacher per year, mm-hmm. and then from 7th through 12th, then you would have had, each subject had their own teachers. Mm-hmm. So in total, you might be like 20, 25 teachers. Who do you remember? Is there any one that you remember?
There's a few, yeah.
Okay, but the point is it's the same environment. Why do you remember them?
Yeah, just because, you know, some personal connection I have with them or something. Yeah,
but the point is was it about their clothes? Because they're dressed as everybody else. Mm-hmm. It's how they deal.
Right.
That's the whole point. It's about how you make the connection. It's not about, you may walk in and they're going to judge. They're going to judge you anyway. Mm-hmm. The point is you walk into a classroom. Now, when you say classroom, what kind of classroom?
The kind of example I was thinking is that, you know, I started a bhakti yoga club at one college in Pasadena.
Okay. But yes, okay. So bhakti yoga, so that would be on the tertiary level.
Yeah.
Okay. So the thing is they're going to judge you anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, are you wearing what they're wearing? You know, do you have a tattoo? You know, or you know, what do you have that you look like them? You're never going to look like them. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Even if you do look like them, why would they want to listen to you? What do you have? Because you look just like them. They expect, teachers look different than that. The professors on the university, do they dress just like the students?
Well, you know, usually it's maybe a little bit more formal.
Yeah. So, but that makes the difference. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you do have, all you're talking about is the particular kind of color or, how you say, cut of the collar, are there buttons or not, uh-huh. you know, or the pants, or the pleats or not, or are they tight-fitting or not, or, you understand? There's a limited volume of things that you can deal with.
Sure.
So we're talking about subtleties here, right? So the professors, they dress differently. You know they're a professor. They may be a more hip professor, they may be a less hip professor, but they're still a teacher, and there's still an age difference.
That's kind of what I've, you know, what I was kind of going for dealing with the students was like, you know, usually I would kind of like, you know, be somewhat, almost like semi-formal or something.
Yes, so therefore the point of being formal is not actually the difficulty. The dhotis also make it formal. The point is how you wear the dhoti. It's clean, it's nice, it's tasteful. You wear it nicely, because we tend to not worry about our devotional clothes, but also in America, most people don't worry about the karmic clothes either. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you've been in airports in America, right?
Sure.
And you can stand there for a couple of hours and only see maybe three people that are dressed nicely.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that was, for me, that was JFK. You know, so you expect a little more on the East Coast. You know, L.A. is like probably they'd all be slobs, you know, unless they were something out of Hollywood or something like that. You know, so the thing is it's a matter. It's more a matter of you. What makes you comfortable? It's not them being comfortable. It's you being comfortable.
Yeah.
Because whatever you wear, guaranteed for that whole classroom, it's wrong to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? In other words, the professor, how they dress is tolerable to the students. Okay, professors dress like that. They look weird, but hey, that's how they dress.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that they're going, wow, this guy, I love the way he dresses. I really want to hear from this guy.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So basically, it comes down to more, are you comfortable? So if you're not comfortable in the dhoti and all that, they're not going to be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that. That so much has the effect on them, especially if it's a club.
Mm-hmm.
Club means they're voluntarily coming there. It's another thing is, okay, you've worked out, and the school systems somehow or another decided, okay, all this secular stuff is really great, mm-hmm. we love it, but at the same time, the kids are becoming more and more uncultured because there's no morals, and morals traditionally come from some kind of religious system. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we, on a regular basis, have people from various religious backgrounds come in and give some presentation of the class.
Yeah.
Right? So, therefore, then, you know, that you're just there because you're supposed to be there and it's part of the curriculum and all that. But a club means that they're going to a club.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So then you have to judge whether it's really the clothes that are that or what. You know, you can't just take it just automatically, oh, it's the clothes. Because devotees before would do these things and they didn't bother. It's like in Gainesville.
Yeah.
How much prasad they've distributed. They go down there as devotees and all that. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that. See, the thing is you have to remember is high school students technically are supposed to be the most liberal of all the different people because they're freed from their what they grew up as, but they haven't actually got into the scene and made their own kind of that. So they should be the most broad-minded, because we're talking about, oh, but the educated, you know, people won't accept. To me, that's a contradiction. If they're educated, they would accept. Uneducated, they're the ones that don't accept. Now, okay, the guy's driving a, you know, a 4x4 muscle truck with two shotguns in the back window. Now, he doesn't accept. He thinks you're weird, and I understand that. But if we're going to say they're on a university and they don't understand that, then I'm saying that you're not dealing with educated people. You're just dealing with, you know, smart fascists. That's all. You're not dealing with democratic, liberal, eclectic, you know, people that the university is supposed to produce. Does this make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just, you know, kind of the, you know, the way it feels sometimes is it's like, you know, like there'll be...
But then you have to explain it. Uh-huh. In other words, you have to be open to explain it, so if they come up, well, why are you wearing this?
Yeah.
You know, what's with the bed sheets? You know, it's just like, okay, you're from that side. One devotee in New York, he's walking up the steps. You know how people sit on the stoop, right?
Yeah.
So the guy's sitting on the stoop, they're going upstairs to a program in the house. And he's, you know, he's wearing his dhoti and that. And the guy on the step says, hey, what's with the bed sheets? And then he says the blankets were dirty. They were best of friends after that.
Yeah.
You know, so when he came back down, hey, what's going on? What are you guys doing? What's happening here? You know, some yoga or something. Because the thing is like back in the 60s, yogis came, they wore yogi kind of stuff. You know, they had the beards, they had the long hair, they had the funny outfits, and you know, they, you know, talked funny and, you know, like that, and talked in peace, always harmony, you know, all this kind of thing. They're different than people, the aristocrat people went. Prabhupada, where was the first place he went to a yoga studio? Right? On the upper, you know, west side, I think. You know, rich ladies, rich this, big clubs, and all that kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of people appreciates that. The poor people, they're not going to judge you like that because they look weirder than you do. Their pants are falling off. They've got a chain there to keep their wallet in, but the chain's so heavy is that you can just grab the chain and pull on it and get at the wallet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? It's not exactly your most practical outfit. You know, a big, huge, baggy, you know, T-shirt, you know. Yeah, we're not the weird-looking ones on the street these days. Previously, yes. Now, no, not at all. You know, so we're not weird.
I mean, you know, it's not so much that it seems like it's weird to them. It's just that, it's just like, you know, they'll see me as like, you know, like a religious figure. You know,
because we are.
Yeah.
So the problem is we are. What's the problem?
In some situations, I feel like that's beneficial. But then in other situations, I feel
so
like...
Then you adjust it. Uh-huh. But just don't make a thing that we can't wear these things.
Right.
If it works to use the other and they'll listen better, do it.
Uh-huh.
But it's not that, oh, devotional clothes don't work, like right. Some in America are trying to make it out to be.
Right. Yeah. No.
That's just total nonsense. Mm-hmm. Point is if it will make it, do it. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had his coat and he had his you know, patent suede shoes.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is when devotees wear kami clothes, they don't wear good kami clothes. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
Very few do. They look like slobs. You know, so who wants to listen to a slob?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's why the professor either he's in the science wing and he looks like a slob, but it's a suit that he looks like a slob. You know, it's just not fitting, it's old, it's this, that, because he doesn't notice. Because he doesn't notice. That's why he's a slob.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so smart and thinking something else. Not that he's so... So he has something else he's thinking of. But the common person, they don't have anything higher to think of, and they're not socially viable, and so therefore they're slobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then we dress like that, and then we're supposed to fit in. But you can always tell the devotee. Anyway, even if you wear karmic clothes, they can still tell you're a devotee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes it's like it's almost more of like a familiar kind of interaction. It's
as long as it works.
Yeah.
But the point is then as long as you're very careful that it doesn't turn into the other thing doesn't work.
Right, right.
Because Prabhupada came into America, dealt with all those different people and all these different levels, and just wore what he wore.
Sure.
You know, so if the brahmacharis, the grihasthas, you know, make adjustments, but the sannyasis don't.
Uh-huh.
Prabhupada didn't go into Singapore because they wouldn't let him in the dhoti. He wasn't about to put on karmic gloves.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the basic principle is sannyasis don't adjust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have that position, they have the authority. You know, the Pope wears karmic gloves, Cardinal wears karmic gloves, Bishop wears karmic gloves. Your parish priest might sometimes. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is yes, we are authorities in spiritual life. That's what we're here for.
Right, right.
You know, you want to know, you know, it's like before, I don't know now, but it's like in the 90s, they're doing polls. There was some poll, I think it was early 2000s. They did some poll about religion and if they identified themselves as religious.
Right.
And what religion and this and that. And a lot of people identify themselves as Hare Krishna, but they're not practicing at all. People we don't even know. And when it came to a thing about, you know, who knows answers to these kind of questions, people would say us. Not that they necessarily liked us, but they know that we got the answers. So therefore, we have answers and behave in a way that they like you.
I guess kind of why I brought up, you know, going home is because, you know, there's a saying, you know, you're never, you know, like a prophet is never recognized in his own country or something
right,
like that.
Right.
You could go and try to represent like that, but they don't see you the same way that, you know, like a stranger might see you, you know, like they still remember you as that relationship that you
if they know you from before, that's another thing. That's a different thing. Then you address how it works for them.
Yeah.
Or if it does, make sure that when you're with them, you make no comments on the lifestyle, what they do, this and that. In other words, if you're with old friends and you dress as a devotee, or even if you're not, and let's say, hey, you want to go get something to eat, and you go to places where you go to get, you get stuff, you know, that you get, you know, if you're vegetarian, I eat this, you know, like that. But don't complain about what they're eating.
Yeah.
Just keep it on the conversation. Don't bother about what they're eating, what they're doing, what they're this and that, you know, oh, hey, you know, where's this? Oh, she's, this happened. Oh, okay, sorry, you know, like that. And, you know, like that. Just keep it light.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can, then put in some philosophy.
Yeah.
But at least you're nice. They'll like you. You're a devotee. So if they like a devotee, that's always a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference. If you already know the people, that's one thing. If it's a campus you went to, they all know you there, then you become a devotee, then you might find you that's wearing that. There.
Mm-hmm.
And if they, you wear the robes, says, yeah, I wear the robes, you know, like that. You know, at the temple and this and that. I thought you guys would prefer I don't wear the robes. They said, no, it's okay. Or, yeah, it's better.
Yeah.
Then you just see. And if they say, oh, no, it's cool, wear your robes, then wear your robes.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And there should be confidence. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
They say weird stuff anyway. You know, whatever they say is could be in 6 months, it'll be different anyway.
Mm.
You know, it's just like, Okay.
Maharaj, I'm Eric. My name's Eric.
Eric. Okay.
You can be friends with Jaykush and Anandakirtan.
Anandakirtan and?
Dr. Jaykush.
Jaykush.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is our first time in Mayapur.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We all like to listen to your classes online.
Oh, okay. Okay. So. Okay.
I had a quick question. You were mentioning about the devotees in San Francisco, although they were like hippies, the preaching was perfect.
Yeah.
Because they were discussing, you know, Sarvangya, Abhideya, Prayojana.
Yes, yes.
Just Krishna's good personality, Godhead, we're not this body.
Right.
You promised to love Krishna, like chanting Hare Krishna.
Right.
So that method worked.
Right.
But now we have like a lot of devotees who preach in like big companies, and they speak on the aspects of like, compassion for all the entities, nurturing the soul, they don't really address Hare Krishna. So does that also have a...
But how is, when does it become preaching?
Yeah.
I'm saying, how is that preaching? Okay, you're making them nice people. And is that our international society for making people nice?
Mm-hmm.
How is it preaching? If it's a matter of they get to know the guys and this and that, and there is a time, but Where is the time in this method of preaching? How does it work? When do they actually get down to getting the chant? Okay, you got in with the big businessman, but why waste your time? Unless you can preach to them, why waste your time? Because it's not like, oh, they're professionals, you can't say this thing. I know devotees that, you know, they'll start off on one thing, but within 2 hours, and it's all professionals. They make tons of professionals devotees. So the point is about spiritual life, because when it comes to business and this and that, you're not going to impress them there. You know, like that. So then, since you're going to do all that, why not get paid for it? Go down and, you know, work for Apple, and then you're their Apple representative to go around and make all the other companies do what Apple does. You know, compassion, dear things, this and that. Or your representative for, you know, how you call the guy, how to win friends and influence perfect. Carnegie, you know, go work with that institute, work with the Covey Institute, or, you know, do that. At least get paid for it. So you're not getting preaching done and not getting paid. So then what's the point? That's the advantage. If you wear a dhoti, they know there's some. What's with the outfit? You know, what's with the mud on your forehead? It's a, you know, body's the temple of God. You know, so it's just representing that. You know, so you know, then you're saying, oh, that not, if you do that, then you're subtly saying that you got to do this to be a devotee. So does everybody in Catholicism wear a funny hat that's got a hole in the top? No. Because the Pope wears that. Is that subtly saying everyone's got to do it? What about the cardinals? They all wear red. Does that mean all Catholics should wear red? Bishops all wear black and all. Does everyone wear black? No. So where does this come from? You understand? So you just go in there. That's the thing. You're devotees. Or you'd be able to come in. You have to find some angle that's common, and then from there get into Krishna consciousness. Not that you don't start on something there, but it's like we got stuff to say. So talking about what was there, but you want to apply it in business. You have the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. That's how business works. You don't know who you are. You don't know who you have to work with. You don't know your field of economics. You don't know your goal. How are you going to make a plan? And then how do you execute the plan? You'll never make money. So in other words, if they're successful, they're applying Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana properly. They don't know it, but we can explain it. You know what I'm saying? And then the whole point is, why does that work? Because there's eternal laws. There's the Supreme or the Absolute, whatever word works for that. So there's laws. We say laws of nature. So there's laws. So that means there's a lawmaker. So that means economics. Man didn't create economics. It was already there. There's eternal laws. He didn't create cooking. He didn't create fire. He didn't create... They're always there. So science just means the documentation of what's already there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the problem is... you could say it's soft. I don't know about preaching. You know, you have hard preaching because they're preaching, but it's hard. It's not actually designed for the person they're talking to. You know what I'm saying? So, but preaching means you deliver the philosophy according to the nature of the person. So use the wordings and the examples that relates to them. That's preaching. Hard preaching means you're a bit rough about it. Soft preaching means you generally don't do any preaching. There are those who will start off soft and come in, but that's just preaching. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have to know, because otherwise the soft preaching is so overrated, as if it's, you know, the thing. But very few people can do it and actually make devotees. There are devotees who do it. And the devotees they make are quite strict and all that. And generally they come from more educated and professional backgrounds. Because they, as more professional people, expect a cultured behavior. But it's about cultured behavior. It's not about that the culture itself is what's going to attract them. You're cultured and you present Krishna consciousness. If you're just cultured, then what's the point? You know? I mean, you're a nice guy, but how nice? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is preach. Professionals have brains, so they can discriminate. So then teach them. If we're just going to sit there and walk around on, you know, tiptoe around, it says then nobody's going to get any benefit. They're going to go to others. You have to notice, on the bookshelves, how many Bhagavad Gita's are there? tradition? How many self-help books from other gurus and Ravi Shankar and all these kind of guys? Wherever the monk is that sold his Ferrari, and, you know, all those guys. Because we're not out there. We're not saying anything. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Something more? Yeah. 3 minutes. Do you have something?
Well, yes and no. I was just really moved by how, you know, how powerfully you endorse Srila Prabhupada and his preeminence again. You know, yeah. I hear too little of that. And yes. I can understand devotees with their questions about the Diksha Guru and how much emphasis should I have on him and not Prabhupada and yeah. because I hear so much of it going on. Yeah. First of all, I felt really moved almost to tears when I heard you endorsing Prabhupada so powerfully. Out of that came a lot of questions, and I'll just put one, and that was, again, the issue that some of these people that lead certain devotees away from Prabhupada's line.
Right.
You mentioned how most of them, that's due to neophyte-ness, mm-hmm. you know. They don't know any better. Right. And when they hear things such as, you mentioned, how Prabhupada perhaps hasn't given us everything. He's given us the basics.
Right.
But we have something more than that. Over here. With, and it's...
That just means they don't understand Prabhupada either.
Yeah.
That's all. It's not that they may not be advanced, but they don't understand either.
And when they say that not everything is in Srila Prabhupada's books, it's
that means
so they, wrong.
They haven't, yes.
For me, it just means that they haven't found it yet.
Yes, that's all. Because it's revealed. It's called
revealed script. Exactly.
So they aren't looking, so they're not finding.
It might not be in the black and white in the print.
It is black and white in the print, but they don't see it. You have to know what the words mean. Because it's written in English, so it's not a technical language on one level.
Exactly.
On, at least philosophically. If you get philosophical, it does have words, but then it's stuff like the church uses that no one will understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
So
like
it's a
that.
Non-argument. This is a non-argument.
Yes.
That there is stuff that Prabhupada has not given us.
No, everything's
because
there.
The law books for 10,000 years.
Yes, it's all there.
Says
and,
something else.
Yeah. And even if there's some technical points that are on a more advanced level, he mentions what books to look at them in.
Yes.
He already refers to those books. But then the point is you have to be able to see them. And then if you see a contradiction between Prabhupada said and what this other acharya said, then you're not supposed to be reading those books.
Right.
Right? Like he mentions everything of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all the information from all of his books are in Jiva Dharma and Sri Chaitanya Sikshamrita. So you only have to read those two books.
Right.
Like that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said his books are for me, but Brahma Samhita he recommended reading. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that. And then, the songs of the Acharyas. So that's Narottam Das Thakur. Mm. You know, I'd say Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs. Mm. You know, like that.
Mm. Yeah.
So it says there. Then the Goswami literature. You know, he points at that thing. So, you know, when will I be interested in Narottam Das Thakur? When will I be interested in reading the literature of the Goswami? And so he says what literature specifically, you know. Sanatana Goswami is Brihad Bhagavatamrita. You know, like that. So he mentions the books.
Yeah.
But the point is if you see contradiction, then you shouldn't be reading them.
Yeah.
That's all. It means it's too early. Just doesn't, you know, put it down and keep doing what Prabhupada says and try again, you know, later.
No, I just find it really moving personally.
Oh, okay.
Very moving.
Okay.
So thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, no. If this is understood, then so many difficulties that are there in the concept of guru and disciple and relationships and temples and this and that would all be solved. But the point is it's not actually understood. It's just, okay, Prabhupada's bona fide, so now, you know, like on the academic platform, we're cool. You know, we're good.
Yeah.
Rather than what the founder acharya means. Because, like, you know, we'll allow, like, what is it, that one devotee, founder of ISKCON, or founder of, you know, this place. You see it come up all the time. Or on the book, sometimes it says founder acharya. Founder will be in small letters. Because in English, you would use small letters. But founder here, it's actually, it means a position. So, like you say, president, it's a capital letters.
Mm-hmm.
So founder is a position. Devotees don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I brought that up on a BBT book. You know, and the chairman says, no, it's supposed to be capital. Somebody missed it. Well, why would they miss it? Because they don't catch it.
Yeah.
What it's for. You know, so that's the thing. Founder Acharya is a position. It's not just, okay, he founded this and we're founded this. No, we don't use the term.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's a unique position. You know, just like, let's say you're speaking to a Sri Vaishnav. They'll only be talking Ramanuja's philosophy, nothing else. Right? Then, if you ask them, okay, who's your guru, then they'll say who the guru is. But in other words, they've heard from the guru about Ramanuja. And we're talking about now, what, you know, 1,000 years or something, you know? So their guru is simply telling him what Ramanuja said. The Madhvas is the same. They talk about what Madhva said. The Shankara is just what Shankaracharya said. Vallabhas, Nimbarkas, you know, that they just talk about what the founder says. They don't talk about something else. But they have their guru. So you know, we have problems because it's all or nothing. You know, it's like it's all about my guru, it's all about Prabhupada. So, no, everything has its place. You know, it's like, you know, that's why I guess in the West there's not much family, because you can't just have a whole family there and you have relations with everybody and you're cool. It's like, you know, it's all about the grandfather, it's all about the father, it's all about this, and, you know, then you can't have relations. So it's a very, very essential point. It's not necessarily appreciated as much as it should be. Because if it was, basically all questions there are in this area can very easily be answered.
And I think you made one comment about how, given that we're just 50 years old as
right.
a mission, as
right.
it were, you know, in 100 years and 200 years, it may be far different.
Yeah, it'll be so developed.
More positive, solid
yes,
way,
it will
given
be.
The next generations.
It will be.
It's heartening. That's kind of heartening also.
Yes, because the culture will come in. Because the point is we have the philosophy, we just don't have the culture. Because Prabhupada said, philosophy without religion is mental speculation. Religion without philosophy is sentiment. So we make comments about the Hindus, they're just sentimental, but we're just speculators. So the point is the culture that they follow is the one we're supposed to be following.
Mm.
You know, some days it said, are we Hindus? We're Hindus by religion, we're not by philosophy. We're Vaishnav by philosophy, we're Hindu by religion. Because what the Hindus follow means, Hindu means follower of the Vedic literature, so we're Hindu like that. So sometimes we really annoy the Hindus because we say we're not Hindu, but we are, by religion we are, but not by philosophy. Hindu by philosophy is, you know, everybody's God,
okay.
like that, you know. But here it's no. We're Vaishnava by philosophy, we follow Vaishnava Vedanta, but we're Hindu by religion, because we follow Vedanta, I mean, Varnashram, so Sanatana Dharma, it's the same thing. So it has to be very...
My wife will love to hear that when I go back and say, I say I'm a Hindu, after all these years, we are Hindu.
Yeah, yeah. But by religion. But yeah. Philosophy, this, you know, jato mat tato pat, that we're not, you know. I think we should end here.